Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as Comic Timing episode number 43. The participants in the discussion were Ian Levenstein, Bob Breitel, Julian Lyle, and myself, and the topic of conversation was Comic-Con International San Diego. This episode was originally released on the Comic Timing podcast feed on August 13th, 2007.
Welcome to episode 43 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levenstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It's about damn time we wrapped up San Diego Comic-Con. John Mayo, Bob Breitel, Julian Lytle, and myself were all there, so we have an in-depth review of all 5 days at a con. Plus, I included some interviews. No creators were harmed at the filming of them, I swear. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 43 of Comic Timing. That's right. It's safe to listen again because Brent's not hosting anymore. Oh, come on. I kid, man. You know I love you, man. It's all good. But this is going to be a Brentless episode as we are doing our wrap-up of the San Diego Comic-Con. And let me introduce the two guys who have been on this show once before first, and then I'll introduce the brand new guest. Let's start it off with the guy who's been here the most and the guy who will probably syndicate this on his own podcast at one point or another. It is John Mayo. What's up, John?
Oh, not too much, and I most definitely plan on syndicating this.
Woohoo! Hey, the more places I can be heard, the better, man. It's all good.
That's what I figure. More Ian, it's good for everybody.
I don't know if that's actually true. We're also joined here by a JLA fan on the forums. He is Bob Breitel. What's up, Rob?
Hi, Ian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, long time no see, man. It's been a while.
Well, on the podcast, yes, but I saw you at San Diego last week.
Yes, well, I meant on the podcast because in real life is different because I actually get to see your face and meet you in real life, which is certainly a plus. Also joining us for the first time on this podcast is Julian Lytle. So we get the artist take a little bit on here, and you can check his work out over at julianlytle.com. How you doing, Julian?
I'm doing all right. Still resting up from that long week.
Man, I hear you. It took a lot out of all of us, I think. Before we get into this episode here, I'm actually going to play, right before we get into the main discussion here, the little segments that I recorded on the portable recorder while I was at San Diego. And that was a little segment I did during the Thursday dinner that we all shared at the CGS meetup. And on that one, I have, John talking for a little bit there, and I've got Hannah from the forums. I am Hannah on the forums talking for a little bit there, and we've got Kevin from Ape talking on that, and we've got the guys from Comic Creator showing us a little bit of the brand new Comic Creator 2.0 and their latest version. We've got an interview with Peter David, and we've got the artist of PS238 going on there. We've got a whole bunch of stuff that I'm going to be airing for you right now, so go ahead and enjoy that, and you'll hear us in about maybe 10 minutes. All right, I'm here at San Diego Comic-Con. This is day two for me, technically, because I was here on Wednesday. And, well, we're at the CGS meetup dinner, and that's why things sound like, a truck behind us somewhere. But I'm actually talking to people in real life for once, so I'm going to take advantage of this. And I guess I'll start off with a guy who I've actually had on the show before, John Mayo, sitting right next to me. Yes, in person, not via Skype. So if you hear anything that sounds like Skype noise, that's just John talking. What's up, John?
Not too much. What's up, Ian?
Not too much, man. San Diego Comic-Con, this is, you were here for preview night, right?
Oh, yeah. As was everyone else in San Diego.
Yeah, that thing was freaking packed. Your reaction after your second day here?
I liked the second day better. Thursday was not as crowded as preview night. I could actually, move. Preview night, man, it was just nuts. And I'm afraid that Friday and Saturday are going to be that crowded.
Is that weird to have preview night more crowded than the first official day of the con?
Yes, but I think the reason for that is they were using it as an incentive to the people they sold the 3-day passes to. And it's in the evening, so people who have to work on Thursday or Friday can still make it to preview night.
See, it was funny. I actually saw people walking around that specifically had Thursday, Friday, Sunday passes that were still at preview night. So was there something involved with that? Any idea?
Those were the 3-day passes.
Oh, okay.
What happened is they sold out Saturday night. And since they figure a lot of people are going to skip Saturday anyways, sell a Thursday, Friday, Sunday pass. So we'll see how it is. I'm hoping everybody's too scared to show up Saturday for the crowds and it's empty.
Yeah, good luck on that.
I said I'm hoping, not believing. I'm hoping.
Well, look, this is my first San Diego Comic-Con. It's already bigger than any con I've ever been to. I've bumped into more people than I've ever bumped into in my life. I've had bags almost take off my head more than any bag has ever taken off my head before. I'm sure that's going to continue as the weekend goes on.
Well, I like the 300 shields they were giving out at one point. I was thinking if a bunch of people just walked in unison with those and just, you know, parry thrust or however that went in the movie, you know, do the flanks maneuvers, you could get halfway through the floor. My worry is that coming the other direction invariably would be a bunch of stormtroopers doing a similar maneuver. Sooner or later they'd hit, and the whole thing would go into gridlock with people taking photos. It'd be a mess.
As long as people are snapping and humming the tune in the West Side Story, let's let that happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, also over here is somebody who's never been on my show before, and she's probably embarrassed to be next to a mic, but let me get her on anyway. Introduce yourself to the world of podcasting.
I am Hanna from IamHanna.com.
IamHanna.com? Seriously?
Seriously, that is my site.
Wait, what do you do with the site?
I blog about my life, put up pictures. It's not very interesting, but it's fun.
Do you see yourself turning it into the I Am Hanna podcast?
I had thought of it at a point, but I already have another podcast with some other friends, so I don't have the time.
Awesome. Now, this is your first Comic-Con like it is mine. How you been reacting to it?
It's massive. I'm tired, and I have to agree with John that the bags with people and you, it's just, oh my God, no. Enough with the bags. If one more person hands me a bag, I'm going to suffocate them with it.
Next person who hands you a bag, just hand it to me. I like bags.
I've been pawning the bags off. Like, I work at the places they hand me the bag. I pass it off to someone else. No more empty bags, please.
Are we going to see people scalping bags outside of this? You know, like, people, like, handing people bags for, like, $5 a piece?
Yeah, they're probably already on eBay. Yeah, you know, the Sony bags. Or, no, well, you could pretty much, you know, carry a person in most of these bags. I like the guys that start bringing the strollers to the convention that don't even have kids. They just bring the strollers. Like, what did you do with your kid? Oh, I borrowed my friend's stroller.
Don't you realize that their comic books are their kids?
We don't go there.
I kind of have a feeling there. You been to any panels so far?
I have not. I'm going to peruse the book a little later tonight, see what's going on tomorrow and Saturday. There's just so much to walk around and see that I don't know if I'm going to make it into the panels this year.
I highly recommend the Stargate panels because, well, there's nothing more geeky than Stargate.
Stargate. Haven't seen an episode yet.
Do it.
It's only been on 10 years. You haven't seen an episode yet? Come on.
I'm a busy, busy person.
Well, look, up until this year, I hadn't seen any. I'm on season 5 right now.
Okay. All right, so I'll Netflix the first season.
Thank you very much. I'm lucky enough to have a friend who has all 9 seasons and is going to have the 10th season eventually, so I didn't have to do that. But, yeah, you will chain smoke it. It's so addicting. Once you start, you will not be able to stop.
All right, I will definitely check it out per the table.
Definitely. IamHanna.com. Remember that. Blogging about her life. That's what I'm talking about. We got other people at the table. Anybody else want to talk here, or am I on deaf ears? I don't know. Let's introduce yourself to the people of the world of Comic Timing.
My name is Kevin Freeman. I'm the managing editor at Ape Entertainment.
Excellent. So you've mostly been at the Ape booth so far, I assume.
I've been able to get away a little bit on Wednesday and Thursday, but I will be trapped behind the booth probably the rest of the show.
How's the traffic been to the Ape booth?
It's okay. You know, everybody's... if you want to go down to where, like, the TV people and the movie people and the video games are, it's pretty packed. But down over where we are with the small press, it's still... You can still move. And it doesn't smell too bad yet.
I certainly hope it actually goes that way, because once the fanboy funk starts hitting you, oh, you pass out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's... deodorant should be mandatory around here, for sure.
Yes. Actually, there's a YouTube video online called Read a Book, and I believe one of my favorite lines from that is, it's called Speed Stick. It's not expensive. Amen to that. Yeah. Fanboys need to take that and go with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, too many people crammed too closely together. It's going to create some serious green funk, without a doubt.
How many Comic-Cons have you been to before this one?
This is my first one.
I mean, how's the experience compared to other conventions that you've been to?
It's absolutely overwhelming. There's so many people, so many things to do, that it's impossible to do everything you want to. So for being kind of obsessive compulsive like I am, it gets real frustrating because there's a lot of stuff you want to do and there's no way you can do all of it.
Well, you basically just have to pick and choose and hope for the best.
Exactly. But before I came here, I made a list of the people I wanted to see, the books I wanted to get, and I hit that list, and I'm probably not going to wander around anymore.
Anything upcoming with Ape that you want to mention?
Oh, man, we got all kinds of stuff. But, of course, I'll be happy to plug my own book, which is Subculture. I'm the writer of that. Issue 2 should be out before before Chicago. I don't know when you're going to put this on. But and then issue 3 is the convention issue, and she mentioned baby strollers. There's actually a reference to baby strollers full of comics in that issue. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
Well, Hannah will certainly enjoy that then. And Steve, don't worry. I mentioned Dave, all right? You're safe, man. Don't worry, Steve. Don't worry about it.
Who's Steve? I don't know. This is Steve Bryan? Is that who you're talking about? No, he's a clown.
Steve Bryan, yeah, forget him. Thanks for being on, man.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We're going to have more here from San Diego Comic-Con later on. Hopefully we have an interview with one of my favorite creators. Who's that going to be? Listen to the rest of the episode, damn you. All right, I'm here at San Diego Comic-Con. This is Friday. Barely got through Thursday, but Friday is now here. And I'm here at the Planet-Wide Media booth getting a little bit of a demo here for the brand new version of Comic Book Creator. And, how about you introduce yourself for the people out there in podcasting land?
Hi, my name is Rhett. I work for Planet-Wide Media. I usually do, like, customer support and stuff, but we actually have various different content packs, like, loaded with the basic program. We have, like, Tokyo Pop, we have Sony Online Entertainment, Speed Racer, Paramount Pictures, National Geographic, various different other things.
What advantages do you get to using Comic Book Creator over, say, you know, just, like, trying to make it from scratch yourself?
It's actually really easy. Just scan in whatever artwork you've created, take whatever digital pictures you've actually saved on your computer. You just upload it with the browser button on the program. All your pictures will upload on the left-hand side of the screen. Just simply just drag and drop all your images into the page panels. It's really simple to use. Like, anybody who's, like, computer savvy can actually just really easily use it. It's mainly geared towards, like, the consumer as towards, like, the artist. But we'll actually be coming out with a more artist-geared version pretty soon, like, within a week, which you'll actually be able to freeform, like, everything within the program. Like, you'll be able to draw into it. Like, if you have, like, your drawing tablet, you'll actually be able to draw onto the pictures, be able to morph the actual panels, you'll be able to morph the balloons, everything. It'll be, like, totally customizable.
Excellent. Cool. And is this the version 2.0, or is this...
Yeah, that will be version 2.0, so...
Okay, cool. Are there any new features in the version that just came out?
Yeah, you can actually, as I said, you can morph everything freely. You can also put in video, and you'll be able to publish it at higher resolutions and stuff like that, so, yeah.
Now, the video, is that direct upload to, like, YouTube or anything like that, or?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
And what sort of features does the video give you? I mean, I know that usually, you know, comic book creators like to go into the comic book realm, but what advantages do they get using the video?
Well, in case of, like, you want to, like, actually have it animated for, like, online purposes, then you can actually do that. It actually, what it does, it mashes video together and spreads them across the page panels, and you're actually able to create boxes for them so that you can actually drag them over in certain sections, like, on the actual panels. So, yeah.
And is this version Vista compatible, or is it the one that's coming up next?
The new version is Vista compatible. The old one, it's just kind of hard because the way how we program it, it's probably not even going to be able to be Vista compatible. We're really trying hard to get it Vista compatible. We're actually coming out with the Mac version in a couple months, which is kind of like a mixture between 2.0 and the basic version. It looks kind of different. It looks more like kind of like you're in Safari rather than like in an actual program. So like it just looks more like user friendly or whatever. So it's like something you'd be more used to.
So it's more of a web-based app?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Where do you see the product going in the next couple of years? I mean, do you know of any things that you yourself would like to see perhaps included in this sometime in the future?
Well, with the pro version, we're like, we want to really get it out to like artists and stuff and be able to, because people pay like thousands of dollars, like, and costs like months and months just to like be able to really storyboard all their comics and stuff like that. And I don't know, we would just really like to see more artists use it, and also more people from like the general public using it, because like it's really fun program. It's really easy to use, and like I guess not as many people know about it as we would like, but yeah, it's really cheap for like whatever, like the professional version, it's going to be like priced around $150 to like $200, and it's going to be like better than Photoshop really. And Photoshop's like what, $700 for like the pro version. It's
Well, that's certainly better for my wallet.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's pretty much the basics right there, and I'll have a bit of a wrap-up once I actually go through the demo here for you guys on Comic Timing. You want to give the website for everybody out there?
Our main website is mycomicbookcreator.com, and also we have our community website where people can actually post up their own comics and post up blogs and stuff like that, rate each other's comics, which is called hypercomics.com.
Excellent. Okay, great. Well, there you go, Comic Book Creator, and like I said, I'll have more information on that once I actually find out about the demo right now, so see you guys in a bit. All right, I am here at San Diego Comic-Con. It is still Friday, and I am here with the wonderful, wonderful writer, Peter David. Peter, how you doing?
Doing fine. Yourself?
Doing pretty well, you know, minus the fact that it takes forever to actually get to any of the booths thanks to the crowd, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Okay, well, good.
So, yeah, you've been writing X-Factor again for the first time in a while. How long have you had the idea to make X-Factor into what you made it into in your head?
I actually hadn't had the idea at all. The concept of taking Jamie Madrox and doing a sort of noir detective story came from Andy Schmidt, who approached me about the idea, and I thought that it sounded, you know, like a lot of fun and potentially very interesting, and I was actually kind of surprised that Marvel was up for okaying a 5-issue limited series featuring a B/C-level character in a detective noir setting. But, you know, Marvel was perfectly happy to do it, and we kind of went, okay. And I wrote it with the notion that it would serve as sort of a backdoor pilot for a potential X-Factor ongoing series that would be somewhat in the same spirit of the Madrox Limited series. And the Madrox series got a sufficiently enthusiastic response from the fan base to justify going ahead with the X-Factor's an ongoing series.
I think a lot of guys are just waiting for you to head back to Madrox and the X-Factor gang and just jump to the opportunity to do, you know, read your stuff again.
Apparently so. It kind of surprised the heck out of me. I didn't know that there was, you know, such a still a significant interest in it, but apparently so.
Well, and another title that you've been doing recently, Fallen Angel, has been doing pretty damn well for IDW after you left DC going to IDW. Do you feel you're more open to do what you want now that you're with IDW than with DC Comics, or is it just the same old book?
You mean in terms of Fallen Angel?
Yeah.
I tend to get even more explicit with Fallen Angel now. Since I'm not, you know, going through DC, it doesn't have to worry about the DC, you know, logo or anything like that. Which isn't to say that DC didn't pretty much let me do whatever the heck I wanted to with Fallen Angel, particularly once, as starting with issue 3, they put the For Mature Readers label on it, and that just pretty much, you know, tore the lid off, as it were. But overall, I like to think that it's still very much the same book in terms of the quality of the stories and the approach that I take to the series.
I was actually kind of surprised to see it under the regular DC Comics label in the first place, as opposed to perhaps a Vertigo, you know, mature title, and they wouldn't have to worry about the mature, you know, label in the first place.
Yeah, well, the problem was that DC originally conceived of Fallen Angel as being a sort of stepping stone between the more family-friendly, as it were, mainstream DC books and the more adult-oriented Vertigo line. It was, like I said, it was sort of to bridge the gap. But that went away very quickly with issue 3 when retailers started freaking out about the content and DC slapped a 4 Mature Readers label on it, at which point it pretty much became indistinguishable from a Vertigo book. It would have been perfectly reasonable for the series to become a Vertigo series at that point, but Vertigo chose not to pick it up.
Now, you're here at the Impact booth plucking your book, Writing for Comics with Peter David. Tell us a bit about the book.
Well, it's, you know, pretty much described per the title. It's everything that I know about writing comic books in one volume. A very slim volume, apparently. People are always asking for my advice and input in terms of writing comic books. And it's certainly, to my mind, fulfilled a need by putting out this book. If nothing else, it essentially means that I can say to people that everything that I could possibly tell them in terms of writing for comics is now in this one place. And when people, because I get queries at least once, not twice a week, with, you know, people seeking advice for comics, and now I can just simply say to all of them, pick up my book.
Makes life a little easier for you.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself perhaps coming out with multiple volumes if this, you know, does well enough?
Well, I mean, I put pretty much everything I know about writing comic books in the one, so I don't know that I would have enough to say of any interest in terms of, insofar as writing comics goes, to fill up yet another book.
Now, I know that you've written a lot of Star Trek novels, yet you've never actually gotten any episodes done for Star Trek. If there were to be a new series, do you foresee yourself perhaps giving another shot at getting a episode done, perhaps for the series?
Probably not. I mean, the fact is that the majority of TV shows are written by staff. If you're not on staff, it's almost impossible to write for, you know, series television. So if the Star Trek office came to me and said they wanted me to write for it, they might be all for it. But I don't think it's tremendously likely.
And as a fan of Young Justice, I just have to make this comment. The fact that we've seen a couple of the members end up in the morgue as of late, are you hanging on for dear life, hoping that the rest of the gang sticks around for a little while?
Well, I would like it if they did. I mean, you know, since I'm not writing them anymore, I don't have a personal stake in it. But, yeah, it does kind of bother me that we see, you know, Young Justice dropping like flies.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you very much for your time. Anything you want to plug upcoming in the future?
She-Hulk is going to be – I'm going to be writing for She-Hulk for Marvel Comics starting with issue 22. I hope everybody buys lots of copies.
All right. Thanks a lot, Peter.
No problem.
All right. That's Peter David. More interviews to come here from San Diego. All right, here I am here at San Diego Comic Con. I have New York on my mind now because I'm actually talking to the artist of 238, Aaron Williams, and I live not too far from BS 238. So, how you doing, Aaron?
Doing very well, thank you.
How's the con been treating you so far?
Oh, it's been wonderful. Been a blur.
Yeah, well, it is, I believe, actually sold out for the rest of the weekend at this point. So you're probably going to be seeing a lot of people walking on by here.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I've never seen the days sell out before this quickly. I mean, the hotel's usually going about 2 hours, so it only follows the rest of the cons going that way, too.
We were lucky enough to be on the secondary list for the West, and then we ended up there. But if not, I wouldn't be here right now.
We got the last room in the Sheraton Suites, and for all you movie geeks out there, it was room 1408. I'm not making that up.
Wow, you can't get better than that. PS3 38, 1408. Wow, we're just going great here. Tell the listeners a little bit about PS3 38.
PS 238 is a comic about the first public school for the children of superheroes. I got the idea from years of reading comics and the fact that my wife has taught public school for years and has been telling me all her stories, and I thought adding a few capes in there might put a nice twist on all those tales she's been telling me over the dinner table these years. And 238 was chosen. I wasn't aware of the one in New York, actually. It was mostly off of all the Bugs Bunny cartoons where 238 figured into all the weapons that Marvin the Martian wanted to use to blow up the Earth.
The 238 space modulator.
Exactly, yes. delays.
Now, are the parents superheroes also, or are these just superhero kids?
It's kind of, if you look at it with the Harry Potter universe, some parents are wizards, some are not. And in this case, I have a few kids whose parents have never dealt with metahuman children before. And then there are some that come from a legacy of superheroes. I use a lot of archetypes. So I have a kid who's kind of an Incredible Hulk kid. His father is similar to him. My main character, Tyler Marlock, his parents are extremely powerful heroes. And he has no powers whatsoever. But they pulled strings to get him put into the school, and he's trying to find his way to survive through all the various mishaps the ways he fears of dying just accidentally, if not intentionally.
That actually sounds like a movie plot right there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, if anyone's out there interested. But, yeah, it's mostly just fun watching, in a way, someone from another realm, someone who's actually been, you know, living in the real world, coming into a realm full of people who are used to being able to fly and blow holes through things. It's almost like having a new perspective on it.
Well, out of the characters you draw, which one's your favorite?
Oh, let's see. Other than Tyler, right now I'm really kind of enamored with one character called the Flea. He's basically can stick to walls and communicate with insects, which is always fun. He usually sticks clouds of insects on people he doesn't care for.
So it's like the next generation of the tick.
Exactly. Yeah, there we go. And he'll be visiting Las Vegas in an upcoming episode with a bunch of other superhero kids, which will be kind of a fun little adventure there.
And Las Vegas will never be the same.
Oh, exactly. Las Vegas is kind of a strange place in my universe. It's run by a superhero version of the mob, where you could have, say, Superman and Lex Luthor visit, but they've got to leave any disagreements they have at the door, or they're going to be visited in the night by some people who will probably make sure they never visit the casinos again.
Terrific. Do you have any other comic works?
Well, I've got a webcomic called Full Frontal Nerdity. It's kind of it started out as a gaming comic and kind of evolved into making fun of movies and just about anything else that us geeks love. Then I've got Nodwick, which is kind of a medieval fantasy one as well. Links to all of my webcomics can be found at www.nodwick.com, N-O-D-W-I-C-K. And I update there every Wednesday, usually very, very late at night around 2, Central Time.
And PS238, can you get that online, purchase it online?
I've started posting the very early works online. I think I'm up to issue 5 on the website right now. So there's a big archive you can go read and see where it all began.
Excellent. Well, I just picked up an issue, and I'll probably end up picking up a trade online at one point or another. So yeah, hopefully you have me hooked.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to have another addict.
All right, that's Aaron Williams here from San Diego. Probably more to come, and if not, well, then you'll hear me in 5 minutes anyway. All right, so none of the people on this call have actually heard any of this yet, so I'm not even going to ask them about that. But they all thought it was excellent, right, guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, totally. Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. All right, so let's get into our main thoughts on the con. We'll go in general first, and then we'll go day by day, because that makes a little bit more sense there. Let's start off with you, Julian. What was your take on San Diego Comic-Con 07 as a whole?
For my third one, I think it's getting a little bit too big. Even from preview night, it was like the biggest preview night I've ever been to.
You know, I hear you on that, definitely.
And it's tiring, but the after-hours things in the Hyatt is pretty fun, meeting all those creators and stuff. But the con itself, I don't know. I got sick of the sci-fi booth and the grindhouse amputee woman. And I just wanted to elbow people by, like, day three.
Hey, well, at least they were giving out those wonderful 300 shields. You know, that's a good way to barrel through people.
I didn't even get one.
This is madness. Madness. This is San Diego Comic-Con. Yeah, let's not have that craziness going on, man. We do not want to fight between stormtroopers and Spartans, all right? That would just be a carnage, and I'm not sure if we'd ever be able to recover. John, what's your take on the full weekend?
It was fun. It was good. It was crowded. Not as bad as I feared, but it was a lot of people. It's got the same, you know, I don't want to say problems, but the same issues I've had for a while. It's gotten to where movies and video games and things like that have kind of taken over. And while it's kind of cool to have all that there, I actually was looking for some obscure 80s back issues and stuff and couldn't find them.
Yeah, yeah. That was my problem with it also. I mean, I thought I was going to a Comic-Con, and when I went there and I saw only $1 bin in the entire place, I was really shocked. I was absolutely shocked by that. I mean, there were 50% off bins, you know, that some of them were giving 20% off, that sort of stuff. But, you know, really only $1 or $2 bins in the entire place. That's not the experience I was hoping for. But I'll get a little more into that as the time goes on. But I feel your pain, John. I feel your pain.
Well, the one thing along those lines that did surprise me, a lot of booths had trade paperbacks, and a lot of them had them heavily discounted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so that's new today at the Comic-Con?
I think to the degree it was. The big shift for me in that area, I thought, was the Mile High booth. Mm-hmm. It used to be back in the day, it was all back issues and stuff. And then a number of years ago, they switched to bringing a bank of computers to where you could order back issues and they drop ship it the next day. This time, no computers, no back issues. It was all trade paperbacks.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, especially since that's Mile High Comics that you're dealing with there.
Yep.
Bob, what was your summary for the weekend?
Yeah, similar to what you guys are observing, I actually, for the first time in 17 years, did not even walk around in the whole comics end of the show and even look for back issues. So I was too busy doing other stuff, but it doesn't surprise me because comics are moving more and more away from this show. It's becoming more and more, you know, Hollywood and TV. And an interesting thing is I ended up getting an autograph from Laurel K. Hamilton, who's author of the Anita Blake stuff.
Oh, cool.
And those are prose novels primarily. I've been reading them for 10 years, mm-hmm. but it's recently turned into a comic book, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it's at the Comic-Con. Well, she was only doing 75 autographs, and in line, pretty much everybody that I was in line with, they wanted nothing to do with comics, you know, other than the Anita Blake, but they were mostly like horror fans. They liked the Anita Blake stuff, and they had come to the con explicitly for that.
Yeah.
You know, interesting.
So it was just very interesting, and I suspect, you know, a lot of these people who are sitting in line for Hall H and things like that,
yeah,
you know, they're mostly there because there's some, you know, whether they like Stargate or Heroes or, you know, whatever TV show, Battlestar Galactica, you know, whatever, that's what they're coming to the convention for. And a lot of this other stuff, you know, pretty much anything from aisle about 2000 and down at the convention, you know, they don't... they have no interest in that stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I would guarantee you that there were at least, I'd say, maybe 10% of the con never left Hallway H the entire weekend. Sure, they would do, like, a quick, you know, floor scan, but I could tell that there were some people that had just basically just camped out of Hallway H, went home, got back early to get back on that line for Hall H, and just sat there all the way through all of the movies and all that because nobody budged all of Saturday.
Yeah. I had a couple of friends who did that at least one day of the convention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mind you, it was good for the actual floor because as we go through our day by day, you'll realize that Saturday was probably the best day to be on the floor because of everybody being at panels and all that. But yeah, let's start off with preview night because obviously that is the best place to start. What time did everybody get at preview night just to get a run here? Were you there early? Were you there around the time that it first opened up? What was going on?
I got there around 3:30.
Okay.
Breezed through getting my badge, mm-hmm. and then got in a severely mismanaged line.
Yeah.
That they really didn't handle their preview night lines at all properly.
Now, is this a new thing? I mean, that they didn't handle it well, or do they usually
handle it? It's a new thing. You know, they used to line people up in the sales pavilion, mm-hmm. kind of all next to each other, and then, you know, everybody would be up there. They'd have, you know, thousands of people in there, but they would let, you know, one line at a time go.
Okay.
This time, I think they had the sales pavilion was all set up with like autograph area and stuff, so they didn't have any room for lines in there.
Yeah.
So they were trying to line people up in the halls and stuff, and it totally didn't work.
It probably. Did.
Well, Julian, what time did you get there, and what was your reaction to the lines?
Well, I went to get my badge. That was pretty quick. And then I just looked downstairs, and I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. And I went to go get something to eat. And I didn't actually enter the preview night until 7 o'clock.
So you had about 2 hours to roam.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was fine with that because the first 2 years I went, it was kind of easy from the way, you know, Bob was saying. That's the way it was. Went in, saw the floor, happy, do some early shopping. But they had people, like, it was so packed so early. I was shocked.
It was crazy Wednesday night.
It was absolutely insane. John, what time did you get there, and what was your reaction?
Well, I was there early in the afternoon to get my badges and stuff. That took a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they got a lot of people going through the lines and stuff, and I had to get the press, the pro, all that kind of crap.
Yeah.
And then I was on the floor as it opened.
Okay.
But I was shocked by how crowded it was.
Well,
at one point, I was walking up the hall, the aisle. I guess it was 5300, mm-hmm. at the far end of the convention center stuff.
Yeah,
right next to Hall H. And I swear, I was just being pushed along the aisle.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling really well. I got there about, I guess it was, I don't know, it must have been about 4:30, something along those lines. And I got my badge pretty quickly. I got the press badge quickly, and I had my barcode for my professional badge, so I was able to get that really fast too. And I love being, you know, being able to get both badges too, because literally I didn't get my confirmation for my press thing until like a day before the con, or possibly 2 days before the con. So I was a bit confused why I had two things sitting in my mailbox. I had a press thing in one email address, and I had a professional at another email address. Then I realized the press badge I put in for about a month and a half ago finally got into my email box like 2 days before the con. Which was kind of a bit insane there, you know, the first send these out at that time, but I was able to get both of them that way. And where I was lined up, I was over by the Starbucks around where, I guess, where the Viz booth was and that sort of stuff on the inside. Uh-huh. And over there, there was no line. There was just a group of people. That's it. No order whatsoever. Just people sitting there waiting.
I think they just let the doors open when they opened it. And just let people in who were milling around outside because yep. I stood in line for hours. And in the past, if you were in line, you were in first before they let the general public in. This year, they just kind of, I think, opened all the doors at the same time because by the time my line got in, there must have been 20,000 people on the floor.
That's
and I know I wasn't
like
behind 20,000 people in line, yep. you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what it felt like to me because, again, where I was, literally, the minute they opened up the doors, it was a Spartan rush. You know, everybody just basically just ran inside, grabbed things. All the free stuff was gone in a matter of, I'd say, 10 minutes, if that. And I mean, that's why I didn't end up with a 300 shield or anything like that. I didn't even end up with a Vizbag, because there was, well, I did end up with a Vizbag because I bought something, but not any of the other free ones, because literally, if you were waving something in front of these people, they jumped them like rabid dogs, especially on preview night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that stuff was a bit, one thing that did happen is most of those companies, they allocated, you know, separate stuff for each day, because there were giveaways from those booths that they had Thursday morning, Friday morning, and even they still had some stuff on Saturday morning. The only thing they seemed to be completely out of by Saturday were those Harry Potter bags at the Scholastic booth.
And my girlfriend was very upset about that. Yeah.
But I got, you know, we got the Harry Potter bags on Thursday, my son and I, and, you know, we, on Saturday, I think we got our Viz bag, you know, the purple cloth bag.
Yeah. Well, on Wednesday, literally, and again, no joke about this, she was one person away from getting her bag.
The person in front of her
was the last person to get a bag, and every other time we went there over the weekend, they were gone. So, I mean, she ended up without them. She was a bit upset about that, but, you know, they are free, so they do go like hotcakes, but it was amazing how fast they went on Wednesday.
Well, I think we're getting pretty close to where we're going to hit a point of con rage, where somebody's going to be that one after they run out kind of a thing, and we're going to have just some sort of shooting spree or something.
At the DC booth on Saturday, I guess they started giving out DC mini-mates or something, and there's just a huge rush, and it's like the guy right in front of me got the last one, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'll live. But then Pants, I saw Pants there, and he had like an extra Aquaman one that was like a double or something that he had already gotten that one, and he gave that to me. So
oh,
that's
cool.
Pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah. That's cool.
And by the way, John, I'm checking your bag like when we get into the convention next year, because, again, you're the one who mentioned it. So, you know, I don't want a shooting spree to happen, man. I'm sorry.
You know. No, if I go in, I'm going with the Zat gun from Stargate.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
One to stun, two to kill, three to vaporize. I'll clear an aisle if I have to.
Just to run ahead here for a minute, at the Stargate panel, they were asked a question. The cast was asked a question. If you could, and the crew for that matter, if you could change one thing, one decision that you've made over the years, what would it be? And everybody basically turned to each other and said, the third shot kills you. Because of just how many times the characters have been shot at by those damn Zat guns. Because they must have at least 300, 3,000 maybe shots in all of them, and they're still alive. So go figure on that one.
Yeah.
a good way to tell what the crowd was on Wednesday was the fact that the Marvel and DC booths were almost empty. Every other booth was packed to the gills, but the Marvel and DC booths, I was able to just walk up to Peter David and strike up a conversation with him. Because he just happened to be sitting there, just hanging out for a bit. I saw he was wearing a Multiple Man shirt, and I asked him where he got it, and he told me and all that. I think it was MutantAcademy.com, for anybody who's looking for that. Yeah, correction on that. I just actually looked it up, and it's not MutantAcademy.com. It's Mutant-America.com for your Jamie Madrox shirt. They also have a Magneto Was Right shirt that looks really awesome. Back to the show. But, literally, the comic book booths were the easiest booths to go up to at the con on Wednesday.
I don't think they were giving anything out on Wednesday night, which, you know, Wednesday night usually is like everyone wants to like just grab up all kinds of free junk and toss it in a sack, and they just run around like it's Halloween or something for geeks, and, you know, they're just trying to get a bunch of free stuff. I don't think they had anything at Marvel or DC other than, you know, the creators, which, you know, oh, gee, who wants to talk to them?
Well, it's funny because I took a totally different approach. I figured it was the shortest day I'd have at the con, so I went to all the places I knew I was going to buy heavy stuff, so I'd have to lug it around for the least amount of time.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's a good call, because actually that's when we got most of our purchasing done. Both my girlfriend and I hit up the actual like retail part of the floor first. Mind you, I got about 5 minutes in at Artist Alley the entire weekend. And that was mostly because of the fact that there was so much to do, and also because it was so hard to actually get over to the Artist Alley, just to get from one side of the hall to the other.
I think Buzz can be responsible for some of my health. I'm not going to look as ripped as he looks now, but I must have walked down to Artist Alley about five or six times looking to meet him during the con, and finally I found him down there on Saturday. He was always gone when I'd go down there. I'm like, oh boy, I walked all the way down.
The only guy I actually got to talk to was Freddie Williams. because literally his table was right when you first get into Artist Alley, was right there. I saw him. I said hi. He was walking over to the DC booth to get something done at that point. So I walked out with him. We talked for a while, and then I headed back and, you know, started looking at booths again. But Freddie was like the only guy I got to approach. I got to talk to Ethan Van Sciver for a little bit, but it was him and Van Sciver, and that's it. I didn't get to meet Steve Bryan again, which was a bit of a shame. I'll have to meet him at 300, which I will be going to, and so will John Mayo definitely. Right, John. Right. Come on, John.
Well, it depends on work. We just had a couple of major deadlines, one of which is like 2 days before episode 300.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, they'll understand. They'll totally understand.
It's when we're going to launch the system, apparently.
Oh, wow. On second thought, I guess we'll see it 400.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, I had very little time at the Artist Alley, and, I mean, that's just one of the problems that I had. Was there anything else that really stood out about Wednesday to you guys that you want to point out? Julian, anything for you?
Not really. I just want them to organize it better. And it seemed to me that this year they only had, like, one door open for, like, every hall. That, like, entrance, they have one door open. They used to have, like, all the doors open, but it just, I don't know.
That's a bad way to slow up traffic, definitely. Did you guys find that problem also, that they only had one door open?
Where I was at, it you know, I was in the front lobby and stuff, so it wasn't really an issue for me. But that's just where I happened to be when the doors were open, sort of situation.
Okay, but I mean, Bob, were they all open where you were, or was it also just one door?
I don't recall there being any problem with the doors. I mean, you know, when they let us in. In the morning, I mean, they'd let you in through a specific door, but, I mean, after, you know, they're letting the line in, they pretty much would open the door, so.
Okay. Did you guys end up taking John's approach and do most of your purchasing on Wednesday, or was that more spread out throughout the weekend?
I mostly went for, you know, if there were, like, con-exclusive things that I wanted to get, mm-hmm. I try to pick those up usually on Wednesday night just in case they sell out, so I got my Sideshow thing that I wanted to get, and I, you know, picked up a couple of different action figures and, you know, things like that. I couldn't get at the Stan Lee figure. I guess Hasbro, they, and it wasn't people, obviously, you know, because, again, going back to the not really interested in comic stuff, they had the Stan Lee and the She-Hulk figures.
Ooh,
and they were limited. That's what I wanted to get, right?
Yeah.
So I go there, and it's like you couldn't even get near the Hasbro booth.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, I got them on, like, Saturday, mm-hmm. And there were plenty of them because I guess all people were swarming that booth for were the Star Wars and the Transformers.
Definitely the Transformers.
Stuff.
Yeah, definitely the Transformers.
But they had a lot of Star Wars stuff, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I had a friend that tried to convince us to wait online for a Transformers thing for him on Wednesday. We basically just looked at him. Before, again, mind you, he wasn't at the con. That's why he was asking us. We basically just looked at him and said, if you think that we're going to be spending most of our time on a line just to get you one thing, sorry, dude. You're going to have to find some other way. Go to eBay, something like that. Because, again, it would have taken us like an hour just standing on that line for the looks of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John, what did you end up purchasing on Wednesday?
Oh, I bought tons of stuff. Basically, I hit a lot of the small press area booths and stuff. I hit the Jetta booth to get the run of Jetta. I hit Bushy Tales to get issue 2. I hit, what's the Studio Dave actors for with scar tissue? Dial-R?
Yeah, Dial-R.
I got the final issue of Scar Tissue. I got the two Dial-R anthology books. Oh, shoot, there was something else. Like, I got a bunch of stuff from that booth. They had great stuff.
Cool.
Billy Bane, the Genius J, Technicolor Almanac of Graphical Wonderment. And yes, I have my comics right here because I knew this question would come up. Path Armageddon, White Picket Fences over at Ape. I got the Art of Bushy Tales because that looked cool too. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I got Empty Chamber 1 and 2, Cyber Angels from some small press that didn't think to put the name of their press on their front cover,
That's not a good idea. That's not a good idea. Hey, what'd you get? Oh, I got such and such. What's it from? To be continued.
Yeah. To not be purchased again, because I don't know who published it, yeah.
Oh, God.
I got the run of Gravy Boy. Which is one I'd been thinking about for a couple of years, but usually by the time I get around to thinking I should get it, either the con would be over or I'd be out of money.
Wait, Gravy Boy?
Gravy Boy, yeah.
What's it about? Is it about a guy made of gravy?
It's a guy who has a superpower to control gravy.
Oh, kick ass. Kick ass.
Now, I, from my own personal viewpoint, consider him a villain inherently because I'm allergic to gravy.
Well, that's it. We know who your archenemy is then.
Yeah, I've got quite a few, apparently.
Yeah.
See, I picked up the run of Utopiates. I picked up the Superpower Sketchbook and Atomica number 8 from the Art of Alex Ross booth cool. with Uncle Sal.
Cool.
I picked up issues 2 and 3 of Alcatraz High, Consequences Short Term Volume 1 and 2 from Consequential Studios, which does A Monk's Tale.
Oh, cool.
And I picked up issues 6 and 7 of that series, mm-hmm. which is really a great series that'll... I think they're going to start listing it through Diamond soon.
Cool.
I got a few other things. What else do I have here? Dreamland Chronicles 2 and 3. Adrenaline 1 through 5. Subculture from Ape, which actually Kevin gave me for free, which is nice of him.
Yeah.
So I think that's about the only free thing I got at the con.
Oh, wow.
Although Bob gave me the Bullet Points trade paperback before con, so
Ooh,
that counts, I guess,
nice.
Sort of.
Yeah. I got to pick that up eventually. I picked up the first issue. I picked up the second issue. I don't think I ever read the second issue, but I didn't pick up anything after that, so I'm going to have to pick up the trade eventually.
So that was a lot of what I got.
Cool. So, yeah, you really did go all out on Wednesday.
I've got about – and I picked a few of these up later in the week, but the majority of it I got Wednesday.
Cool.
So I've got like half a short box of stuff from Con.
Nice.
To read if and when I get the time.
Julian, what'd you end up picking up?
I got the Atomica trade. I think they came with Atomica number 8 mm-hmm. for free. I bought the trade. And the Alex Ross sketchbook. I got the Pulp Hope from Madhouse. And what else? I got Athena Voltaire, the trade of the webcomics from Steve.
Good pickup. That's cool. Actually really good.
And I think that was it. I picked up something for a friend, Orange Fing Fang Foom Hero Click.
Oh, yeah. See, I really wanted to pick up Fing Fang Foom, but I realized I was coming home, and I didn't think there was going to be any room at all in anything I had to fit that, and it was $90.
Yeah, me being a HeroClix envoy, I already have my regular green one.
Nice.
I'm going to have to press about an orange one.
Uh-huh.
I just want to smash people with the green one, so I'm happy.
Well, that's it. It's on, man. The HeroClix battle is on, green versus orange.
Yeah, but that was it. I got kind of tapped out because of something happened with the hotel. They charged me something.
Right.
But they credited it back to me. But you know how crediting things back to your bank, it takes like 3 to 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to get the Adam Hughes sketchbook. I hope he have it in Baltimore. I'll go to Baltimore just to get it because it's that sick, the color sketchbook. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it's stunning.
Yeah. I didn't see it, but I've heard about it, so I'll have to check that out. Bob, what'd you end up getting it?
On just Wednesday, you're talking about?
Just on Wednesday, yeah.
I got the Alex Ross sketchbook and the that Superpowers preview comic. I got the latest Jetta, the last issue of Scar Tissue. I got the current Steve Rude sketchbook, and I actually picked up, I didn't have 2005 or 2006 one, so I got those also.
Cool.
I got my Weapon X thing from Sideshow, which is one of these, you know, you see them if you ever look at my room when John puts it up. It's just I collect these things from Sideshow. And then I just picked up I ended up not getting some of the other exclusive toys because the lines were just crazy long. And I actually went to get a T-shirt because I thought, man, they're, you know, a lot of times they sell out of the con shirts.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was Star Wars this year. So you were going to comment about that, so I won't steal your thunder. But
no, that's fine.
Interestingly, on Wednesday night, there was a huge line for that shirt. I mean, there must have been at least 100 people in line for the shirt. And I'm like, well, I don't want the con shirt that bad that I'm going to stand in this line for 45 minutes or something to get a shirt because it wasn't really moving that fast.
Yeah.
So I just passed. And then on Thursday, I just walked right up to the booth and got the shirt for myself and my son. I was like, no wait whatsoever. So I'm glad I waited.
What got me what got me with the con shirt was, one, how crowded that booth was preview night. But I have to wonder if a lot of that was people expecting it to sell out, because it usually does.
That could be it.
And as of the end of Sunday, they still had shirts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was my thought, was that in past years, the con shirt had always sold out by Saturday. And sometimes it would sell out by Friday.
I think they made a concerted effort this year for it not to sell out.
You think they
because I think they may have not only had more of them, but they might have either been they might have been pre-selling them on the website. I'm not certain about that, but I thought I heard that.
Okay.
I think they probably figured it's Star Wars Image by Adam Hughes, so they're not going to get stuck with them. You know, they can make them available on the web to Star Wars fans, and they'll easily sell them.
I do understand that, though. I'm thinking they might have actually just, you know, printed more because it was Star Wars, just because of the fact that, you know, most people who go to these, you know, conventions are really into the Star Wars. So,
or they may have just realized if they printed more and everybody who wanted one could get one, that people would wear them and it would advertise the convention even more. Not that they need to do that, since it sold out just about every day.
Yeah.
And that was new.
Yeah, and it did sell out every single day. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all completely sold out.
Well, technically, Wednesday didn't sell out because you couldn't buy tickets for Wednesday.
True. Yeah. But
did Thursday sell out? That was the only day I wasn't sure about.
I'm pretty sure it did. I could be wrong on that, though. Because I remember hearing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think I remember seeing a sign that said Thursday sold out.
Okay, I thought it might have. I'm not sure.
They pretty much sold out every day.
Okay.
I think they sold out every day this year, which was, you know, another unprecedented thing.
Yeah. And just to go through my list of things I got on Wednesday quickly here, because, again, it was most of the stuff I got through the con, like, the entire weekend, because I realized, again, retailers were pretty empty over there. I got myself... I'm now only missing one figure in the Batman Season 2 Japanese figure collection. I now have pretty much everything except for Batgirl. I got myself the Nightwing figure. And again, these are those figures where you don't know what you're getting until you open up the box. So I got
Those are the little ones. What are they, like the Kodo Bakaya or something like that? What's the name of the designer?
It's something along those lines. Yeah.
But I've seen the larger ones, but I haven't seen the little ones that are in the little mystery boxes.
Yeah, and these ones are a Mr. Freeze. There's a Batmobile that's not on the box. It's basically the quote-unquote special figure that is in limited quantity that I was able to get. Nightwing. There's a Batman versus Man-Bat. And there's a Batgirl. That's the collection. And all I need is Batgirl now. So again, I just have to shake the boxes to see which one sounds like Batgirl. And if I'm lucky, I'll get it. So
how much do those run a piece?
Those actually, I found them at the con for the cheapest I found them anywhere, $4.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Compared to the $6 I paid at Otakon, it's actually worked out a lot for me because, again, this is stuff I usually see at anime conventions. And I guess because it was a comic convention, they marked it down. But, again, this is pretty damn good deal on that. I got the, and again, I absolutely love the fact that I was able to get this period. I got a Sonic screwdriver pen that came with psychic paper. So pretty much it had invisible ink where when you show the Sonic screwdriver over it, you can see what it says, which was pretty damn cool.
That's cool.
And I got the TARDIS 4 USB hub. So whenever I plug in anything to this hub, it makes a TARDIS noise.
Awesome. That's cool.
As a Doctor Who nerd, this was fun for me. And it was one of the first boots I hit up when I got in there. I'm like, ooh, wait, Doctor Who, must have, need. So that was a nice pickup.
I saw that Sonic screwdriver. I was tempted by that.
That was, and again, it's really, really nice. And it comes with an extra ink cartridge, which is actually pretty cool. So, you know, when one runs out, you can just switch it right back into the other one. I got the Peter David Visionaries Volume 1, because I've been meaning to pick that up for a while. I got myself the first Captain Britain trade of the Alan Moore, Alan Davis run, which, again, I basically just picked it up because it was 50% off. So I'm like, okay, fine, two trades for the price of one. That works for me. I got, what was the other trade I got? I got Understanding Comics Volume 1, And there might have been one more in there, but I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But that was definitely my Wednesday, and I'm trying to think if there was anything else. Oh, yeah, my weeklies. Sadly, I was one of the guys who ran to a booth that was selling weeklies and picked up my weeklies for that Wednesday because it was Wednesday. I couldn't resist. But one thing I did...
I'm surprised you could find a guy selling weeklies.
There were only about 3 people that were selling weeklies.
I was going to say, there were not many.
Yeah. Yeah, which was surprising.
My local shop would always come to the con, you know, and they were there. Well, you know, my guy, like, moved, but, you know, they were there at the con, and this year they didn't have any new issues. Every other year, they've always had new issues. This year they just had boxes of 50% off trades, much to John's observation from earlier.
Yeah. Wow.
They didn't have a single new comic.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, I guess it's just because trades sell better these days, or is it easier to pack?
I mean, well, I got to wonder if they're selling better or not, if people are blowing them out at half off.
Good point.
I think they must be getting them somewhere. I mean, I can't believe that they're buying these trades for whatever their regular price is, and then they're lugging them all to a show just to sell them for 50% off. Because, I mean, they're not getting them much more, if at all, than 50% off if they're paying regular price for them, right?
Agreed.
So I'm wondering if they're getting remaindered out of Diamond or something, and they're getting them for 75% off or 80% off, so it's worth their while to sell them at 50, and they just think they can move them.
Now, I didn't check what trades they had that they were doing the 50% off at. So I don't know if it was newer stuff, older stuff, or like you said, more like remainder type things.
It was a little bit of both, John. It was a little bit of both.
Okay, interesting.
Because my girlfriend was able to pick up the first 3 volumes of New Avengers, all for 50% off. And that's not, you know, that new because, again, they're on to Volume 4, Volume 5, and so on already. They did have some stuff like the most recent New Excalibur stuff was in there. They had a couple of DC trades that were sort of new. But most of the new trades were full price at a lot of these booths.
Hmm.
So, it kind of depends on where you were, really. Like, for example, obviously 52, month 2 came out that week, and people were selling that for 20% off as opposed to full price, which is not that bad, but not for 50%. Also, one thing that I realized, and I guess this is a West Coast thing, so I guess maybe Bob will be able to point this out to me. There was the first booth that I hit up that had weeklies, I ended up not buying from because they were charging tax on the weeklies. Now, is that something that happens in the West Coast?
They do charge tax for comics, and actually the San Diego, and I guess the city must get a cut of it or something, but they're huge sticklers out in California at the cons. They make these dealers like fill. They have to like purchase temporary seller permits and stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, Some of the booths, they're just not charging tax, and especially if you're paying cash, I think they're like actually fully paying at would be sticking people with the tax, you know, as opposed to eating that themselves.
Okay, yeah, because the guy I actually ended up buying my weeklies from wasn't charging tax, so because literally, I mean, you know, being from New York, we're not used to that at all, so we pretty much just looked at the guy and said bye, and if anything, we were going to end up buying our stuff at home, but luckily we didn't have to because we found one guy that not only did he bag and board his books, but he wasn't charging tax for anybody who didn't use a credit card. So we were lucky enough to find
see, and there, there's that, right? Because if you use a credit card, there's a record of the sale. So if you're paying cash, that kind of lends credence to the if they can just slide it under the table, they're not charging the tax there.
Oh, and mind you, of course, I come back here because I only bought, you know, like the essentials ones that I really wanted to read. When I get back here to Midtown Comics here in New York, Midtown Comics loves to only order enough to have about, like, say, enough for that week. So then I get back, and, like, the 3 issues of stuff that I didn't get a chance to pick up at the con were all gone. So I'll have to go to Jim Hanley's Universe here in New York sometime this week and pick up the rest because I need to get Green Lantern Corps. I must read Sinestro Corps all the way through, damn it. Okay.
That was a good book.
Yeah, so I've heard. That's why I'm like, yeah, I need this issue fast. All right, but I think we're pretty much done with Wednesday. So unless there's any other comments on Wednesday you guys want to make, we can move on to Thursday.
Not for me.
Okay, cool. So here we go to Thursday. First official day of the con. Did you feel Thursday was as crowded as Wednesday or more crowded than Wednesday?
I don't think anything could be as crowded as Wednesday.
Really? Okay.
I don't know. I felt Thursday was just as crowded as Wednesday was.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
I didn't think it was light by any stretch, and maybe it was just the part of the hall I was in on both days too, because Thursday I started at the low numbers, which is the comics kind of, you know, ghetto, I guess. So I, you know, obviously in that area it's going to be less crowded. Whereas
I never actually made it over to that end, so maybe that was the difference.
You mean you stayed out of the ghetto?
I went down there like maybe one time.
Wow. Yeah. Well, again, it was difficult to navigate those halls. Were there any panels you guys hit up on Thursday that were memorable to you guys? I guess we'll start with you, Bob. Anything?
I went to actually two panels on Thursday. I obviously went to the podcasting panel kind of at the end of the day there.
Yeah.
And earlier in the day, I went and saw, what was it? The Stan Lee True Believer. Stan's, there's a documentary on Stan, and Stan was there and some other kind of Hollywood types. They showed about 10 minutes of footage from it. I like Stan Lee, so...
One of my favorite things that I have from the quote-unquote special edition of Spider-Man was the first movie, because that had mutants, monsters, and marvels in it, which was Kevin Smith's interview with Stan Lee.
Right.
It's still, I think, one of the best things Kevin Smith's ever done, because you can see his love for comics just come out so much in that, and Stan was a perfect gentleman as always, and that's really a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
That was a good one. That's a good disc.
It's great stuff, yeah. But, you know, John, it's a shame we couldn't make it at a podcasting panel.
I was there.
Really? I don't remember being there, and I don't remember... Oh, wait, never mind. Yeah, we were there. I'm just the guy who came fashionably late.
Yeah, I was there on time.
Hey,
you may not have heard much from me, but I was sharing a microphone.
Hey, well,
a very touchy, loud one if you even moved it. Every time you hear a thunk, that was me repositioning the microphone.
Well, they did get released on iFanboy.com, and I'm going to have that on there. So, John, what was it like being on the podcasting panel?
It was really weird because, I mean, I've been going to the San Diego convention for like 25 years. Mm-hmm. So to finally be on the other side of the microphone at one of those panels was really strange. You know, I'm not much of a public speaker, so it was a bit nerve-wracking. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
I can say that you did a good job. I mean, definitely. I mean, mind you, I'm biased because I was on the panel too. But I mean, you definitely, you know, spoke your part and did a really good job of speaking when you did. So what you had to say was certainly relevant to the panel. So I give you props for that, my sir.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It just felt a bit odd because I was sharing a mic with Scott Hines of Fanboy Radio, and he's been doing the radio thing for like six, seven years now. Uh-huh. You know, I'll admit that so far on the podcasting stuff, a fair amount of my content is stuff I've, you know, syndicated from other podcasts. Now, granted, I've been on all the episodes and stuff, so it's not like I'm just, you know, syndicating someone else's content.
Yeah.
But they've done, you know, oh, hell, I've used a lot of your episodes, like this very one I'm going to syndicate. So, you know, somebody else is doing the legwork on the editing and the putting the episode together and the hard part. So it was hard not to feel like a little bit of I don't want to say an imposter or fraud or whatever, but, you know, kind of a Johnny-come-lately compared to a lot of the people on that panel.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll just let you start editing the episodes that you're on. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, you'll get them out real timely that way.
Oh, man. But, no, I mean, it was a lot of fun to be on, and it did feel kind of weird, though, because, again, this was my first San Diego. You know, it just felt odd at my first San Diego being on a panel right off the bat, because I was really, really nervous. And I've been on panels before. You know, I've done stuff at anime conventions, but just to be in a room that big, mind you, it wasn't all the way full or anything, but just to be in a room that big felt really nerve-wracking to me. You know, just realizing I'm at San Diego Comic Con talking at a microphone. It felt kind of weird to me, but after a while, I got used to it. And the guys there were a lot of really nice to talk to, and we had a wonderful moderator as well. So that worked out really well. Well, Bob, you were the bystander, so give us your take on the panel. I mean, was it interesting to you? Or again,
yeah.
you don't have to say that it was interesting just because we're you know talking to you right now.
No, I mean,
you're really awaiting.
Certainly don't say it was good because Ian was on it. Say it was good because I was on
Thank
it.
No, you. Yeah.
No, I mean, I enjoyed the panel. I thought that it was interesting because, you know, a lot of the
main podcasts I listened to were not represented on the panel. You know, like, you know, CGS, obviously. And,
I was surprised
by
that.
Collected Comics Library and, you know, things like that. Not that I don't listen to yours, Ian, but probably of the ones that were on the panel, you and John are the only ones I listened to on there. So it's kind of interesting that that was the case. I don't like fanboy radio, so I just kind of refuse to listen to that one. And the other ones, it's just a matter of time. You know, I just don't have enough hours in the day to catch all these different podcasts. So
Comic News Insider is good stuff. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Comic News Insider, that is really good. And Joe and Jimmy are, you know, good buddies and all that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of podcasts that are good podcasts that I just don't have time to listen to.
Understandable. You know? Yeah. But I just need to plug this quickly here also because I think they'd have me on a skewer if I didn't, because I'll probably have this out in time. I hopefully will have this out in time. I really hope I'll have this out in time. Probably not, but I'll mention it anyway. Comic News Insider's 100th episode.
So, oh, wow.
Congratulations to Comic News Insider for getting to that point. Paul Pope and John Cassaday on the episode with them. So, again, they're awesome dudes, and congrats to making it to 100. It's a real milestone to make. The fact that they sat down and actually recorded 100 episodes is hard enough to do. But, again, props to Joe and Jimmy for that one. And ComicNewsInsider.com, definitely go and check those guys out.
How long does their podcast usually run?
It kind of depends, actually. John, they don't really go over an hour that often, right?
I don't think so. I'll admit I am woefully behind on theirs. I like it, but again, there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's a manageable length.
I'll have to give it a listen. I mean, I know that, like, Raging Bullets is, like, totally outside the realm of, you know, what I can listen to because of the length.
It's not
even though it's
hours
supposed
like
to be really great. It's, you know, Around Comics is another one that's just way too long for my taste. And the only really long one I slog through is CGS, just because it's, you know, the first podcast I ever you know, got turned on to. So they kind of got grandfathered in.
Julian, do you listen to Comic News Insider?
No, I haven't got around to listen to it. I don't have that much time in the day after I get to CGS and your show and Around Comics, and then I listen to my news, lots of news podcasts.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And video games.
I forget whether or not you were actually in the audience for the podcasting panels. I guess I'll...
No, I wasn't able to make it, so...
Okay, yeah.
I was like, got my friends in the room, and then, like, I was like, oh, I gotta go meet everybody for dinner.
Yeah, well, that was nice timing, though, I do have to say, for the dinner itself. The fact that it was directly afterwards, you know, we were able to just meet there in the room, and all was well with that. So let's actually segue into the dinner here, because that was probably the best part of Thursday for me, was being able to go to that dinner. And that was so much fun over at the Rock Bottom Brewery, about like 5 blocks away from the San Diego Comic-Con, so it was nice and easy to walk to. That was such a good time, and I'm so glad I went. I mean, any good stories you guys have from the dinner, or just random, you know, like, yay, it happened?
I want to start by thanking Atomic 99 for organizing it.
Yeah.
I mean, he really stepped up to the plate and did a great job on that, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, bravo to Ralph. That was a great job on getting that all set up.
Yeah. And plus, also, it was nice that he was snapping pictures, too, because I don't have a digital camera yet. So I was kind of hoping that there'd be at least one person there taking the pictures, and I'm glad that he was able to take some, so yay for that.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah.
I was glad to meet Pants and talk to Pants for a good period of time.
Oh, yeah. No, Brian Christman is such a nice guy. You know, I mean, he is a genuine gentleman, and it was nice to get to talk to him even for the little bit I was able to talk to him there, because there were so many people. 35 people were jammed into that room, so it was hard to talk to everybody. But I kind of hoped to talk to at least a few people, and I'm glad that I got to talk to who I did. Specifically, the guy who came all the way from Australia.
Purple Belly.
Oh, yeah.
Purple Belly.
Yeah, Purple Belly. Matt was able to, you know, make it in there, and yeah, he is such a nice guy to meet in person. I'll get to hang out with him actually on Sunday over at the Yankee game. He's going to be here in New York. But again, nice to talk to him there, and everybody else I got the chance to talk to, Hannah, was also really nice. She was sitting right next to me.
Yeah.
Easy to talk to her. And also this other guy, John Mayo, was sitting right next to me. I don't know him that well or anything, but he was cool to talk to. Did you have fun talking to yourself, John?
I found it interesting. You're only one down from me, and I didn't have a. You didn't even hardly talk to me,
dude. it was amazing.
It's so crowded in there, you know.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, it's amazing how things like that work, you know, because like once you're like centered in, it's hard to move around and actually talk to everybody there. So like all these different conversations are going on, and the fact that everybody had a good time, that's what's really important. And I'm sure I'll get to talk to you more in the future, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you guys did on Thursday that you want to mention? I mean, I know that that John and I went to see Superman Doomsday, and I wanted to mention that at least a little bit because there were definitely some opinions from that I drew. But anything else that Julian, anything else from Thursday that comes to mind?
No, Thursday was a light day for me. It didn't get crazy until Friday. Thursday, I think I walked back with you guys, and then I went to the room, and it was kind of it. Kind of just slept.
Yeah, sleep's a good thing in a con, man.
Yeah. For me, Thursday was really busy, but most of it before the podcasting panel.
Uh-huh.
I managed to walk the entire hall on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Nice.
Which I never did the whole week.
Yeah. I was surprised I could do it one day.
I'm surprised you could, too, because, again, I tried
to. With the crowd, yeah.
Bob, anything else that you did on Thursday you want to point out?
I don't know where all the time went. It's just it was gone.
That's kind of how I felt. It's like I looked at my watch, and I'm like, wait a minute, it's 2 a.m.? What the hell? What's going on here?
I couldn't make it as late as you guys. I was beat after that dinner. I was just not up to... that Superman Doomsday movie.
Yeah. Well,
that was probably much later than I should have stayed up.
Yeah, well, I did get to make it to the countdown panel on Thursday. It was fun because I got to approach Jimmy Palmiotti and ask him the question I've been meaning to ask him for a while. Well, it wasn't a question, more like a statement that I ran into his cousin because I guess it was about a month and a half ago now. I was on the bus heading home in Brooklyn. Chris, my girlfriend, and I were just sitting on the bus, shooting the breeze, talking about some comics. And some guy just, turns around and says, "Oh, you're into comic books." I'm like, "Yeah, I am. Like, "Oh, it's funny because I have a cousin who's in the business. Maybe you've heard of him, Jimmy Palmiotti." And I'm like, "Why, yes, I have heard of him. He's one of my favorite writers." So we got to talking until we ended up off the bus. So I mentioned to Jimmy Palmiotti, "I met your cousin on the bus." And Jimmy just laughs and says, "It's okay, I'll get your wallet back, I swear." Yeah, but that was the highlight of the countdown panel, because very little else was revealed there other than Grant Morrison and J.G. Jones doing the art on the book, which, again, it was a cool reveal and all that, and Countdown being changed to Countdown to Final Crisis was cool, but nothing else was really revealed there. It was just the same old DC panel where they say, maybe, but maybe not. Come back next year and we'll have a different answer for you.
Well, I tell you, for my money, there's no point going to any of the DC panels these days. And not because of any lack of content or anything like that, because a lot of them are great fun and stuff. But unless you want to see it as it happens, see it in person, or ask a question, just wait for the podcast. They've already released all their panels as podcasts.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I mean, because, again, podcasting works that way. I mean, it's nice that they're able to get those out as quickly as they do. Did Marvel podcast their panels? I forgot.
Not that I've seen yet.
Okay.
They may, but again, I haven't seen it on their feed.
Okay.
They're slow like their books.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Jab. Jab, jab, jab. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about Superman Doomsday here for a little bit, as both John and I saw it. John, what was your impression of Superman Doomsday? Again, it wasn't the actual Superman Doomsday story at all. It was their own take, and for that matter, it wasn't even Dan Jurgens's art like they had mentioned that it was going to be. But what did you think about it?
I had very mixed feelings. For what it was, it was not bad. But I went in there expecting it to be a much more faithful adaptation of the comic story, much more faithful artistically. While I thought Adam Baldwin did a fine job as Superman and James Marsters as Lex Luthor, part of me is wondering, gee, how come they couldn't use, somebody who's already associated with the Lex Luthor character, be it Clancy Browns or even Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville or something like that? So some of the voice casting seemed a little odd.
Well, especially since these guys, Clancy Brown, Dana Delaney, and I forget who voices Superman in JLU.
Tim Daly.
It is Tim Daly in JLU?
George Newbern.
Oh, George Newbern.
Yeah, there we go, George Newbern. They're all reprising their roles in The Batman. So it's not like they're not available to do voice work these days. They just decided to go the celebrity route, I guess. And Anne Heche, as or however you pronounce her name, as Lois Lane, was one of the worst Lois Lanes I've heard.
Wow.
I could not stand her voice. It was like daggers to me. Like, this is not how I envision Lois Lane to sound at all. I like the way she looked. She looked okay, but it just was not what I wanted from the movie at all. That was my major gripe with it. Other than that, what was up with those lines on Superman's face?
Yeah, that was a bit odd. They had these things that were like supposedly defining, I don't know, the cheekbones or something like that, and they just looked horrid, like he was scarred or something.
They pretty much looked like somebody dropped some ink and they decided to keep it.
Well, it looks like they were put on the model sheet for the angle the model sheet was at, and that whoever did the animation didn't really get what they were trying to do. But I can't imagine that's the case.
You guys are making me think I made the right decision to go back to the hotel and get to bed earlier.
You know what?
Well, I'm not going to say you made the wrong decision. How about that? Let's put it this way. When we got there to get in line for the 11 o'clock showing, it was in Ballroom 20. The line went all the way to the back of the convention center, hung a left, and went all the way down the remaining end of the convention center. I mean, that line had to be quarter mile to a mile long. It was insane.
And there was still room in the room, which says just how big that room actually is.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do have to mention about it, I like the fact that it was a bit more mature. You know, it did feel like it was a PG-13 rated thing. You know, the things they threw in there were kind of cool, but the entire thing felt more to me like a animated rendition of Superman 3 than Superman Doomsday.
Well, on the rating thing, there were a few places where I think they needed to kind of up the rating level and not be a Saturday morning cartoon to show Superman bleeding, little things like that, to have a little more violence. However, there were a few other places where some of the language used, I'm pretty sure, was not in the comics.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that didn't really add anything to the story to me, in some respects even detracted. And seemed to be an artificial way to, ooh, we're more adult, we're more mature.
Just to give Julian and Bob a little bit of a, and the listeners for that matter, a bit of a summary here. Again, this is a bit spoilery, but not that bad. You know how they had the Reign of the Superman and all that in the comic books? It didn't happen at all in this. Instead, Lex Luthor makes himself a clone of Superman. And that clone is the quote-unquote new Superman. Until eventually, big shock, Superman returns. And, you know, heads on back and battles him. So that's sort of what we had going here. That's why it reminded me a lot of the battle between Dark Superman and Light Superman, as it were, in Superman 3. So,
okay, that sounds not that good at all.
Yeah.
Well, you got to figure, they're taking the storyline of, you know, the death of Superman, funeral for a friend, and the return of Superman, Reign of Superman, all that stuff. They're having to remove all the non-Superman characters. No Justice League, no Green Lantern Corps, no Coast City.
No
Steel, no Superboy, no Eradicator, no Cyborgs. No Supergirl. So you've already, you know, just by doing that, stripped, you know, half the story away from it. And then it's a matter of, you know, piecing together what's left.
Yeah.
The other thing that got me was the pacing felt, I don't want to say off or wrong, but just odd. They packed a lot of story into, what, 80 minutes or so?
Yeah.
But because it was based on, you know, 21 or whatever page comic books, it seemed to go almost in fits and spurts at times. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
It's worth watching. You just have to go in with the right expectations.
Well, it's a movie that I can certainly say one word to, because it's a nice compound word, Netflix. All right? Don't pay money for this. Netflix it, and you'll be a happy boy, all right?
We got two words for that, Cartoon Network.
Uh-huh. They might show it eventually on say, Toonami or something like that. But, again, it's not that bad. It's just not what I was expecting. They showed a trailer at the end for New Frontier, and that looked absolutely beautiful. The art style's perfect, and it looks like they have decent actors for it.
Yeah, looks good.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Hey, Lucy Lawless is voicing Wonder Woman, all right? How could that not be good?
Oh, man, it's going to be the best one.
Yeah. Well, before we get into Friday, I realized this recording happened a little bit later than originally planned, so Julian's going to have to head out because he has to wake up nice and early. So let me intro him out of this and plug you a little bit. All your stuff can be found at julianweidel.com, correct?
Yep. All my art and my new stuff that I do.
Excellent. And what's this about ass face I see on your site?
Yeah, this is something I did for Heavy. It's like a weird, crass, political, like, pundit that talks out of his ass.
So kind of like Assy McGee?
I guess so. I haven't watched Assy McGee, but it sounds like a New Yorker that talks about political stuff. It was like 10 episodes during like most of the spring.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's over now.
Well,
it's pretty funny.
Of course, you know, saying that all New Yorkers, you know, sound like they're talking out of an ass. That's fine. It's okay. I'm okay with that.
Hey, I went to school in New York, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm used to the accent.
Yeah. But, again, that's heavy.com for that and julianlytle.com. And anything you got upcoming that you want to plug or anything like that, Julian?
No. Hopefully I'll get some upcoming. Someone to the show.
All right, sweet, cool. So, again, check out julianlytle.com and you get a chance. He is a wonderful artist, so go ahead and give him a shot. And you're going to be at CGS 300, right?
I don't know yet.
All right, well, hopefully I'll see you there, buddy.
Hopefully I will, but we'll see.
All right, go get your rest, man, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, man. See you guys later.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty. Okay, so there's Julian Lytle. And again, you can find him stuff one more time. I'll say it for the 17th time over at julianlytle.com. So now it's John, Bob, and me for the rest here. And let's go on to Friday, I guess. Friday, obviously, there were much more panels. But I'm not sure whether or not you guys took advantage of that or whether or not you trolled the four there also. Was it a panel day for you? Was it a Hall H day for you? What did you guys end up doing on Friday?
I had meant to go to a lot of panels. I ended up only seeing one panel. I bought a whole bunch of stuff downstairs, different publishers. Actually, I got a lot of autographs and such on Friday, and it was the day that I actually ended up making my way to get that Stan Lee action figure. You know, I got some other figures like that, and then it just, you know, I got a lot of autographs. But I went to one panel, but it was a really good panel.
Well, which one was
that? That was Marvel in the 60s and 70s.
Ooh, nice.
Mark Evanier was the host, and it had Roy Thomas and Gary Friedrich and Dick Ayers and Mike Ploog. You know, they were just, you know, like just hearing Roy tell stories about, you know, working for Stan Lee and what it was like, you know, working in the Marvel offices and all this kind of stuff. That was a really good panel.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Were there a lot of questions or was it just mostly they're going back and forth?
Mark Evanier asked a lot. I mean, the way he runs a panel is he'll usually have a whole bunch of panels, which are pretty much the kind of questions that people in the audience would ask anyway.
Okay.
And he runs the panel that way. And then near the end, he opened it up to some audience questions. So there were, you know, five or six audience questions. But mostly Mark ran the panel and kind of led it in very good directions.
Cool. John, what about you? You hit up any panels on Friday?
Well, Friday started with me regretting I'd stayed up so late Thursday because I needed sleep and didn't get enough.
I'm sorry.
No, it was fun, but I'm just not built for this.
Yeah.
I went to a couple of panels on Friday. I went to the tail end of the Stargate SG-1 and caught all of the Stargate Atlantis panel. Those are tons of fun.
Yeah. I was actually there for the SG-1 panel, and then I had to duck out because that's when I had my demo scheduled for the comic creator. So I caught about, I'd say, the first 45 minutes of Stargate SG-1 and then had to duck out for that. But they did show a little bit of a preview for the movie and all that while I was there. So that was actually really cool to see. And it's really weird seeing the actor that plays Teal'c with so much hair. That's all I have to say about that. It's frightening, and I want him to shave it all off.
Oh, but Christopher Judge is just hilarious.
No, he is. He's great.
He's fun.
Yeah. And although the one guy that wasn't there was
Michael Shanks.
Yeah, Michael Shanks. Apparently last year he was hungover, so it's probably a good thing that he wasn't there this time around. The call that they made, I heard that they made a phone call to him to see whether or not they could, you know, get him on for at least a minute.
Oh, yeah, I was there for that. Christopher Judge tried a few times. I was half waiting for Christopher Judge to hang up and just call Corin Nemec instead.
I'm surprised he didn't, actually. That would have been fun.
I'm sure if he had thought of it, he would have.
Oh, man. But he did end up getting the wife on the phone, though, at some point, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a plus. And she's on Stargate also, correct?
She played the Doctor.
The Doctor.
For last season or so.
Okay.
Who showed up half a dozen times.
Yeah, I know. She should have showed up a lot more. She was also on
Andromeda.
Andromeda, there you go. Yeah,
she played Andromeda.
Yes. It's not hard to remember who she played. How was the Atlantis panel? Did they reveal anything on that about the new season or anything like that?
It was fun. It was good. They had most of the cast. They had Amanda Tapping, Jewel State, David Hewlett, and Joe Flanagan.
Okay.
Maybe one other. They had, again, most of the cast. It was fun. It was good. Did they really reveal anything? They gave the typical, you know, trailer kind of, you know, season preview kind of, you know, bold new action adventure, you know, villains coming, alien races coming back, new ones, et cetera, you know. Mm-hmm. Lots of, gosh, wow, it should be fun and explosions sort of trailer. And then usual Q&A. So it was fun. It was good.
Cool. Did you end up with one of the Save Carson flags that they were giving out?
No, I didn't realize that's what those were. I saw at one point a bunch of flags being waved in the front, and I was like, "What is this?"
They're Scottish flags with a Save Carson emblem in the middle of them.
Got it.
Yeah.
The problem isn't being Scottish; it's being a doctor.
Yes, because doctors die a lot on Stargate.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, Bob, are you a Stargate fan at all?
I have never watched an episode of any Stargates. I saw the movie, so no.
Well, see, it's funny. I was in your exact same boat until about a year ago when my friends finally convinced me to start watching it. I just finished season 5. I'm anxiously awaiting getting season 6. Once you start watching it, it's very hard to stop.
It's a fun show that way.
Yeah. So I warn you that if you do start watching it eventually, Bob, you're probably going to end up chain-smoking it.
Yeah, there's very little danger of that happening anytime soon. Okay. I have yet to watch Battlestar Galactica either. I actually have the DVDs of that. I'll have to get to that at some point.
Yeah, I've actually only watched this past season, so I first have to go back and watch the previous ones.
But personally, I'd go with Stargate over Battlestar Galactica.
I would agree, because, again, it's a lot more fun and a lot more backstory involved, but I ended up going to the Stargate panel, and the only other panel that I remember hitting up, I could have hit up another one, I don't think I did, but the only other one that I remember going to that day, because it was mostly a 4-day for me, was the DC Nation panel, and it was pretty cool and all that, but again, it was a typical DC Nation panel. What do you expect? They did reveal some stuff, like Bill Willingham has a new miniseries coming out, and they revealed a couple other things here and there, but nothing too special. It's just fun being at those panels because DiDio does manage to make things fun.
He's a good salesman for DC. I will give him credit for that in person. Yeah. I think the way their marketing stuff kind of sucks these days, but he does a much better job running the panels than like Bob Wayne would do in the past years.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you on that. And he didn't spill anything he wasn't supposed to spill this time around, so I guess he did a better job than he did here at Comic-Con. Again, mostly it was a 4-day for me, but still very hard to maneuver down there because of so many people that were actually there. I'm trying to think whether or not it was more crowded to me or less crowded. It was pretty much as crowded to me. Do you feel that there's anything that they could possibly do to make the crowding any less next year, or do you see this being a problem in the foreseeable future?
Sell less tickets or have more big panels that will filter people off.
Okay.
So or Tesseract technology, just make it a bigger, you know, room inside.
I just don't know what they can do because there's not even really any place to expand the hall size to there.
Well, I know that they're considering making an extension on the San Diego Comic-Con, either on top of it or either extending across the roadway. I've heard rumors.
Yeah, I heard they were going to extend it through Harbor Boulevard and just cut Harbor Boulevard off at that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would kind of be bad for traffic, but at this point,
seems like they could tunnel it under. I mean, like, if you ever been to Phoenix, or I mean, there's lots, or like even Chicago, mm-hmm. where the road kind of goes, you know, they've got the city kind of built over the road, you know, like if you go on, like, Wacker Boulevard in Chicago, it goes, like, right underneath downtown. They could do something like that. I mean, they could just burrow it down and take Harbor Boulevard and just build the convention center over the top of it.
That could work. Yeah, that could work.
I just hope if they ever do that they start, you know, the day after Comic-Con ends 1 year, and work, you know, as hard as they possibly can to have it done before Comic-Con the following year.
I suspect that whenever they do it, that is a multi-year project. And
I'm certain it's a multi-year project. I just don't want it to be. Oh, yeah.
See, it's funny that you mentioned that because I had that same problem. Well, again, Otakon has this problem in Baltimore that there's a brand new hotel that they're building that is going to be one of the main hotels for Otakon. And everybody was hoping and thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, no, it'll be great to stay in there next year. When's the date when that's going to be finished? Well, fall 2008, which, of course, means it will just miss Otakon 08, and you're not going to be able to actually experience it until Otakon 09. So, again, that's 3 years that people are waiting for this hotel to be built to be part of the convention center, and it's not going to really happen.
How close is that convention to filling the physical space, though?
Very, very close.
Because, I mean, obviously they haven't started construction. They don't have plans to start construction, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And San Diego sold out at least three, if not all four, of the days.
Yeah.
There's physically not space for expansion. And typically they're adding, you know, 10% of additional, you know, attendees every year, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, with Otakon, Baltimore Convention Center is not nearly as big as the San Diego Convention Center, not even close by far, but it fills up the entire Baltimore Convention Center. And just in comparison here, the Baltimore Comic-Con fills up the area that Otakon uses for its dealer's room. That is the entire Baltimore Comic-Con.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, I'll tell you what, I used to think that San Diego Con, the convention center, was huge until somebody posted, you know, about moving it. There was a thread on the forum, and I actually went out and I, like, hit the websites of other convention centers.
Uh-huh.
And the L.A. Convention Center
is bigger
than the San Diego, not by much, but it's bigger. The Anaheim Convention Center is significantly larger.
Really?
Than
the
San
Diego. Which is the one that E3 was at?
That was the L.A. One, correct?
That was L.A. That one's only slightly, because San Diego is about 520,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And L.A. is now about 570. Okay. So, you know, 50,000 square feet. However, the Anaheim Convention Center is over 800,000 square feet.
Oh, my God.
And then Vegas is just huge.
Well, yeah.
You know, so
Vegas has been trying hard to get it to go there.
And you know, the interesting problem is that, like, Los Angeles, well, downtown Los Angeles, that would suck because there's no public transportation. There's no decent local available hotels. You know, it's slightly bigger than San Diego. But, you know, the downsides of having it in downtown Los Angeles are certainly not worth making the move and putting it in downtown L.A. Now, in my opinion, Anaheim would not be bad because, you know, you got Disney right there, so there's tons of hotels and other kind of tourist infrastructure. So as long as you made your reservations well in advance, you know, you could easily do it in Anaheim. And then Vegas, you know, they're way set up to handle huge, huge crowds of people, and no one would ever have to worry about not getting a hotel or, you know, things like that in Vegas. So
it just seems like every time a convention's been tried in Vegas for comics, it usually just doesn't do too well.
Yeah, I mean,
well, you know, because they've always been trying to create a new convention.
No,
you know,
that's true. That's a good point.
If they took the Comic-Con International and they physically moved that, you know, that would be it. Now, the other problem is, though, is that the people who run that convention are all volunteers, and they all pretty much live in San Diego. So,
yep.
So the chances of that con actually moving in all reality are very slim because the people who work to make that con and to bring it to us, and they put tons of their own personal free effort into doing that, you know, they live in San Diego.
Yeah.
If it's going to move to another city, it's because that city has actively courted the convention and done so aggressively.
And I don't see it moving to Las Vegas because the last comic convention to happen in Las Vegas, you know, Rich Johnson from Lying in the Gutters died and CSI got involved. So it's not really going to happen again.
So you're saying that's a downside or an upside? No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I like the Lying in the Gutters series. So that was
fun.
Another problem that I've had with that, again, I see about it moving is that, well, think of how many people call it San Diego Comic-Con, even though it's not technically San Diego Comic-Con. They're going to have that problem because it's Comic-Con International, but so many people recognize it as San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, that they've worked that branding issue for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years going to Comic-Con International. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Everyone calls it the San Diego Con.
Yeah.
So they could do an aggressive marketing push and get it renamed if they need to. But it comes down to where would they move it to? How badly do they want to move it? Suddenly, the minute it moves, I mean, they're no longer as familiar with the physical location. They don't have the home court advantage, so to speak.
Yeah.
It would be a very tough transition year or two whenever, if and when they decide to make that move.
And I don't really see it happening anytime soon because, well, just think of how much money this brings in for San Diego as a whole, this convention. I mean, every hotel around there, every food place, every movie place even gets so much additional foot traffic because of this convention. And without it, they're losing so much.
That's true, but that didn't make prevent the mayor from making those ignorant remarks about it.
Well, that's just a stupid mayor. That's just a stupid mayor saying something stupid.
Which remarks were that?
That was a thread on the forum. He was on some radio show, and he made some disparaging remarks about people who come for Comic-Con. And then he has since recanted when people started pointing out the millions of dollars it pours into San Diego.
I believe it was something along the lines of, "Oh, the comic book guys are gone. Now we can go back to the real talent," or something like that.
Yeah, wow. American Idol. We'll have some real talent here with American Idol coming in this next weekend.
Yeah.
Apparently the guy doesn't realize that, half the stars of all the genre TV shows were in San Diego at the convention.
Uh-huh. One of the things that actually I brought up a couple times during the convention and other people brought up, do you feel that the convention was suffering from E3 runoff? That is, people that would normally go to E3 decided to go to the San Diego Comic-Con instead because of the fact that they could not get into E3 due to its downsizing this year?
No, not really. I mean, granted, the additional people had to come from somewhere, but it's not like this was an unexpected or unprecedented surge in attendance. Mm-hmm. I think it probably was just normal growth.
Yeah, it's been growing steadily every year. I mean, I don't think there's been that big of a spike. Just every year it gets bigger and crazier.
Well, see, one of the reasons why I thought that right off the bat is because the video game booths were packed. Absolutely packed.
They've been that way for the last couple of years.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
You got to look also at the publicity that this con gets. I mean, mm-hmm. Entertainment Weekly had an article about it.
Yeah.
The week before, there's just you start hearing about it on The Daily Show. Things like this. They start talking about it, and it's not in it's changed. The article in Entertainment Weekly wasn't a zip pow, bang superheroes kids kind of thing. It was Hollywood oriented, right? And it was, hey, Hollywood is now going to this Comic-Con and they would rather spend money on this than on something like Cannes or putting money into some billboards and opening events the week before a movie comes out, because the value that they get out of promotion at an event like this is worth tremendously more than almost any other venue that they could sink dollars into.
It's not
promote any kind of genre kind of movie,
And it's not even just Hollywood either. It's even the anime companies. For example, Viz Media was not at Otakon this year, but they were at San Diego. And mind you, they were a week apart, so I can sort of understand that, but Viz has always been a staple at many of the, East Coast comic conventions, and they decided to go to San Diego instead. And that's just, a quote-unquote Comic-Con. That's not an anime convention. They'd rather go to a comic convention than an anime convention because they're still going to have more people go to their booth at a comic convention than they would at Otakon in the first place.
Yeah, well I would imagine that San Diego, just in terms of size, is the equivalent of, I don't know, I'm going to guess half a dozen or a dozen anime conventions.
Yeah.
And there were tons of people dressed in, anime type of costumes.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For every person I saw in costume, it was like one out of every two, it seemed, were in some kind of anime type of costume.
Yeah, yeah. And we kind of laughed at that because, I mean, we just came from an anime convention where all these people were, and it felt like we never left. I mean, it was literally everywhere we turned, oh, that guy's wearing a Naruto headband. Oh, you know, that girl's dressed like an Inuyasha character again. You know, it was funny seeing some familiar faces even from the con that I just came from a week before, because, again, I realized some of these people that were the exact same people I just saw a week ago back in San Diego. So go figure on that. I got to make it to the Eisners on Friday. I'm not sure whether or not you guys were able to make it there, but that was a lot of fun. And it was nice to take advantage of the professional/press badge, being able to be in front of that red line and, you know, get the food and all that. But did any of you guys make it to the Eisners this year?
I did not. I had other plans.
Okay. But Bob, were you there?
I wanted to, but again, it was, you know, you guys with the press badges and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I was so tired by Friday night, you know. It's like,
yeah.
My son and I, we were just like, because, you know, we can't just go strolling in when they open the thing. You know, we get up and we get in line at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And then the other thing is just to get a parking space under the con, you have to be there by 7.
Yeah,
so
if you want parking,
it's like we just went back to the, we got some dinner, went back to the hotel and called it an early night on Friday.
That's cool. Yeah. Well,
on the parking thing, Bob, I wound up leaving the car at one of the parking garages right by Petco Park.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that expensive and it was reasonably convenient. Not as convenient as being under the convention center, of course, but just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely worth $8 a day, in my opinion. I mean, because I was just able to, you know, like, because Ian, you know, I bring, since I drive down and I'm not, I don't have the issue like you guys might have where you have to figure out how you're going to fit stuff into your suitcase, right?
Yeah.
I've got my car. So,
you know, I have my car and I had to figure out how to fit stuff in my car.
I just look, you know, and I'm like, okay, what kind of, you know, collected editions and this and that do I want to get autographed this year? You know, what do I want to do with this or that? So, you know, I had lots of hardcovers and other kind of things that I, and that's what I spent a lot of time doing, is just tracking down and chatting with creators and like that, and, you know, going to signings and things. But, you know, I don't have to carry 30 books around with me. You know, I'd pick out like, oh, I'm going to do these 6 right now. And I'd go and I'd get those taken care of. Then I'd go down to my car, swap those 6 out and grab another 6, you know, and do the kind of next wave, which that is definitely worth $8 to me.
Yeah,
and having the car right there at the convention centers, the only way to do that. You don't want to have to go hike a block or two or whatever,
I would not have survived if I would have had to walk over to Petco Park to do that swap each time I wanted to do it.
Well, surprisingly enough, I didn't take the ride down from New York all the way to San Diego. You know, maybe next year, but, you know.
I drove from Texas.
Yeah, I know. Dude, you are a much stronger man than I. Because I don't know if I'd be able to be in a car that long without either passing out or giving up. So you are, again, a much stronger man than I. Your sister was at the con, John, right?
Yep. She was.
How'd she end up spending her con weekend?
What did she do? She went to a lot of the press stuff. She went to a lot of the Hollywood panels. Because she, of course, does not read comics like many con attendees.
Mm-hmm.
I think she spent some time in the autograph area, but maybe not as much this year as she has in past years.
Uh-huh.
Some years she spends all her time there.
Okay.
And she actually spent a bit of time back at the hotel room updating her website. One thing I noticed this year was we got a ton of emails with press releases and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
All within the couple of days before and during con.
Yeah, same here.
And since we had left town the Friday before, you know, we couldn't do any of it before we left because half the emails hadn't come.
Mm-hmm.
She had a good time, though. She had fun. So
I had phone calls from people while I was on the bus back from Otakon, and then I had actually phone calls from people while I was on the plane going to San Diego, asking whether or not I wanted press opportunities. And this one person, I think it was from Toonami and not Toynami, but because it was on a cell phone, I couldn't tell, sent me three different phone messages asking whether or not I wanted stuff. And she said, oh, well, you know, I sent you an email, I never got any of her emails. So I couldn't respond, you know, respond to her phone calls because, well, it was kind of hard to do that when, you know, it's just a generic phone number that pops up there from wherever she was from without any extension. So I just sort of gave up on that. But I also realized that I wasn't really at this con for press reasons. I was at this con to enjoy the con. So had I been doing press opportunities like that the entire time, it would have eaten up all my time. And I didn't really want that to happen. But
I probably would have taken better advantage of the press opportunities if I had known about them before I left town and been in a position to kind of plan my weekend around them.
Yeah.
But as it is, you know, I didn't get a lot of these to my email until I got back home now. And, you know, I've got, I don't know, geez, 1,000 emails in my inbox. And I'm sure once I go through them, at least a quarter of them are going to be things of, oh, we've got this big thing you could go do at this time or whatever. It's like, well, I need more warning.
Yeah.
Which is the advice to, you know, these companies is that, you know, they got to plan this in advance. And, you know, 1-2 weeks before, they got to start notifying the press.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got to figure that the convention starts Wednesday. People have had to leave no later than probably Tuesday. And if they're coming from out of town, they may as well take that Monday off too, at which point spend the weekend traveling, get a little extra time in San Diego or wherever. And, you know, if you don't have your stuff out and in people's hands no later than the previous, you know, Wednesday or Thursday before con, people aren't going to have time to get it and do anything with it.
I would say at a minimum they should, like, that previous Friday should really be the cutoff, at least in anyone's mind.
Friday at the absolute latest, but even for me, at that point, I've left town.
Yeah. Well, see, my major issue with this is the fact that not only would I get emails, but then I would get 3 more emails correcting the previous emails.
Yes, I had a lot of that.
And it's like, you know, get your act together before you're going to send them out, and, you know, that'll probably make me want to do your stuff a lot more. I was highly tempted to actually take up the offer to interview the Stargate people, but then I realized, what would I be asking them? You know, I'd be asking them the exact same questions everybody else would.
I think my sister may have done that, and we sent somebody else to, like, the Who Wants to Be a Superhero one and a few things like that.
Well, I mean, back at New York, I got interviews with Fat Mama and Feedback, so I was kind of okay on that. Had I had known about it earlier than, you know, say about 2 days before the con, I might have wanted to get some of the new people. But then I also realized that I wouldn't know who these new people were because they aired the first episode of Who Wants to Be a Superhero the first day of the con.
Yeah.
And my hotel had probably the worst selection of channels I've ever had at a hotel's – at a hotel ever. It was a beautiful room. I stayed at the Westin, the San Diego Westin. And again, beautiful room, crappy channel selection for the TV.
But we were at the CGS dinner when it was going off, right? So it was, you know, we wouldn't have seen it anyway.
Well, yeah.
Well, and I don't know that any of the hotels get the Sci-Fi channel, which is how come Sci-Fi does the Sci-Fi Friday night stuff in Hall 6 something or other.
Yeah.
Which is when they were showing the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or the Who Wants to Be a Superhero, or whatever. One of those reality
things. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I want to be a millionaire. I don't want to be a superhero.
I want to be a millionaire superhero.
I was just going to say, you want to be
Mr.
Tony Stark?
Mr. Mitzvah there. Did you guys see the first episode?
Yes, I did.
No,
so Mr. Mitzvah, he's a millionaire, right?
The minute I saw his name was Mr. Mitzvah, I'm like, I want that dude to succeed. All right.
He gets on my nerves, Ian.
No, I know he gets on everybody's nerves.
I hope he's off the show tonight.
Well, hey, I was kind of like this. Well, he gets on everybody's nerves. He's playing up the Jewish stereotypes, which kind of suck. But at the same time, his name is Mr. Mitzvah.
Jeez.
So, I don't know. I mean, he is a bit of a pain in the butt. So, for all I know, he'll be gone this today, for all I know. But what are you going to do? But also, one of my favorite moments at the con was at the Eisners. No, it wasn't the dinner, but it was the fact that Jonathan Ross, a British – I believe he's a British night host, like a talk show host at night, kissed Neil Gaiman on stage. All right? Earlier on in the night – These two lesbian creators came on and kissed each other on stage in celebration of the fact that there were so many women nominated for Eisners this year, and the fact that there were so many, in their words, queer writers nominated this year. So then Jonathan Ross comes up with Neil Gaiman, and he says, well, in honor of that, I'm going to kiss Neil. And Neil was like, what? huh, what? He sort of backs away a minute, and then Jonathan Ross goes and kisses him, and the entire crowd goes, woo! But that was a fun moment to experience. Just watching the look on Neil Gaiman's face as he's, you know, like, frightened beyond belief was very, very awesome. Good times. Actually, my girlfriend was the one who actually got, and I'm saying my girlfriend way too much in this episode, but my girlfriend was actually the one who got the video of that is now currently on Neil Gaiman's blog, because she apparently was the only one who happened to have her camera on them at that very moment when it happened, and she's gotten the most views for that video than she's gotten on any other video she's ever posted on YouTube. Go figure. But that was a lot of fun. The Eisners are a lot of fun. If you get a chance to go to them, like, ever, go ahead and take that opportunity.
I've been interested in going. It's just one of those, by, you know, that point in the convention, I'm usually exhausted. And, like, this year I had other stuff to be doing.
Yeah.
I've been to them in the past. You know, I used to go to them all the time. Mm-hmm. I find that since I'm there with my kids, I mean, they really don't. I mean, I can't just dump them by themselves. And I don't want to put them through on Friday night.
Hey, well, the presenters actually were very funny this year. I mean, it was the sort of thing that you would not expect from a, you know, well, quite frankly, it's something you would expect from a, you know, a comic, like an actual comedian award show, not a, you know, comic book award show. These were genuinely funny skits that they were putting on, but yeah, they probably would have gotten bored anyway. Also, another thing that I liked about this is Marvel actually only got, I think, 2 awards the entire night. That's it. Both for Ed Brubaker.
That's not terribly surprising.
Yeah, it's not that surprising, but I was sort of hoping that they would get... I mean, I was thinking that they would get a couple more, but it was all DC and Independence. And then, like, the two awards that went to Ed Brubaker, his first 2 Eisners ever. So, again, congratulations for Ed Brubaker to finally making it to the Eisners and winning them. I think one was for Criminal, and I think the other one was for Daredevil. So, good job for Ed Brubaker on that one. All right, move on to Saturday. And again, Saturday was the huge day, but again, according to you guys, it was not nearly as bad on the floor. But I spent most of the day in Hall H that day because we got there for the Rogue Pictures thing, mostly because we wanted to get seating for Disney Pixar and Marvel Studios. And we caught the end of the Rogue Pictures thing, and absolutely nobody was there for the Rogue Pictures. I actually felt kind of sad for Rogue Pictures because they presented their stuff and nobody was listening, which... Hmm. You know, kind of sucks, but at the same time, when you don't keep people out of a room, people are just going to sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do like that about San Diego, that they don't clear the room.
They used to do that, but they had one year in particular, and this was 4 or 5 years ago, where things just got backed up. And it got to the point where between a panel or two running long, them trying to clear the room, get it reloaded, start the next panel... They basically wound up like a panel behind that day in Hall 6 CDEF or whatever. And it was a fiasco.
Yeah, I don't think they physically could do that even if they wanted to with the number of people at this point.
Yeah.
But I think that was the point at which they decided they had to rethink how they were doing it.
Yeah.
And to their credit, they've never had that problem again.
Well, that's good. That's good to
but
hear.
It's served to like kind of drive me away from all those Hollywood panels because I'm only interested in about maybe 1 or 2 of them.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, you realize that unless you go and sit in that room all day long,
mm-hmm.
You can't go in after the beginning. That's it, because people just camp out in there all day.
Yeah.
So it's just, okay, I'm never going to see any of those panels.
Well, we got kind of lucky. We only got there, I think, about an hour before the actual Disney Pixar thing. And since it was the middle of the day, it didn't really bother us that much. But, again, we got to catch a little bit of Balls of Fury from the Reno 911 guys.
Yeah, the guys who did Hot Fuzz or something.
Yeah.
Now, I want to see that movie. That looks like a good movie.
It looked fun from the clips that they showed. And, again, they were the most fun out of everything because they had their guys there and all that. They had plants in the audience that went up for questions, asking them really ridiculous stuff. But then after that, it was just a normal like movie after that. No comedy, just you know like horror. And everybody just died. You know, they slept for the next hour until Disney Pixar. But when Disney Pixar came up, I got to see clips from the next Narnia movie, which was a lot of fun. And then I got to see clips from WALL-E, which is the movie I am looking forward to more than any other movie right now. Comic book, anything otherwise, they all pale in comparison to WALL-E, because again, it's the next Pixar movie, and it's about a robot, a cleaning robot, the last moving thing on Earth. That's it. is this robot. The entire Earth gets abandoned, and this robot evolves and all that, and finally, you know, gets to meet humans, like, later on in his life. But most of the movie is not going to have dialogue. It's just going to have, like, beeps and boops from these robots. And it's being done by the same guy who actually did R2-D2 in the Star Wars movies. So this is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm highly anticipating it. And it was well worth waiting in line for, because that was really awesome to see clips from. I did get the chance to go to the Marvel panel afterwards, the Marvel Studios panel, and that's where they showed the Iron Man clip. I am totally convinced now that they picked the right guy to play Iron Man. I mean, in every single way, Robert Downey just proved to me that he is Tony Stark. Like,
no, I thought he was a good choice for casting. So, yeah. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, every single thing about this looks amazing. The armor looks fantastic. Jon Favreau is probably the best, you know, director they could have chosen, because he's a comic book fan at heart. They showed also a image of what the Hulk is going to look like in The Incredible Hulk, and they did confirm that this is nothing to do with Ang Lee's Hulk movie whatsoever. It's officially confirmed that this is just a separate Hulk movie entirely. That's thrown out entirely. That's it. Edward Norton actually wrote the script for the screenplay for this movie that he's going to be starring in as Bruce Banner. So that's pretty damn cool that he was able to do that. Because, again, he's a comic fan as well. And that seems to be a going trend. They're getting the comic fans to do the comic movies, which is a good sign.
Yeah, it's the way to do it. They understand the material.
Yeah. How much are you guys looking forward to Iron Man? I mean, I know obviously it's not as big as just Spider-Man and stuff like that, but it looks like it's going to be pretty damn fun.
I mean, I'll certainly watch it. I may wait for DVD, but part of that is just not going to the theaters and stuff. I'm not, got to see it.
I'll be there opening weekend. I love all those kind of movies. I saw FF, I saw Ghost Rider, any of those kind of movies, I'm right there when they come out.
Yeah, as am I, so I'll be right there in line with you, man. Only I'll be on the other side of the coast.
You'll see it hours before me.
Uh-huh. What'd you guys end up doing on Saturday? Rob, we'll start with you.
I spent a lot of time down on the floor. That was I dropped the most money of any day on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of sketches that I had kind of like dropped off, you know, had people do previous days they were done with on Saturday. I kind of went and brought my sketchbook around. I had I think I got 4 sketches on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was the day that I pulled the ticket for the Laurel K. Hamilton autograph.
Cool.
You know, I only saw one panel again. It was like, except for the podcasting day, that was my second panel. I only saw one panel a day, which is another all-time low for me.
Yeah.
It was just, I spent a lot of time just talking with creators and, you know, doing the autograph thing and just chatting. Because I wasn't in panels, but I saw the Oddball Comics panel, which I try to catch every year. It's one of my favorite ones.
That's cool. John, what about you? What'd you end up doing all Saturday?
Started the day at the Meet the Press Writing About Comics panel. That was fun. It was very interesting. Then spent a lot of the day just hanging out and talking with various people. Talked quite a bit with the people over at Jetta, the people over at Bushytails, Steve Bryant. I'm sure I talked with other people, but to be honest, at that point, everything just the whole Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing just blurs together.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, you mentioned Steve Bryan. I just had to mention this quickly. He was nominated for an Eisner this year, and
yeah, the Russ Manning Most Promising Newcomer Award.
Yeah, and they actually had a mess up when they were presenting his award, the award, and didn't have the nominees handy, so they went straight to the winner, and luckily, they went back afterwards and announced, you know, who they were. But for a minute there, I thought that Steve wasn't even going to get, you know, his name announced. But luckily, luckily they did end up going back and correcting that.
Still, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve was telling me about that. I was talking to him on Saturday, and he said actually they screwed up and they flipped the wrong slide up, and Athena Voltaire was up there for a split second.
Oh God!
And he thought that he had actually won for a second.
Oh, man.
And then they put up David Peterson.
That's even worse. I missed that, actually. I for some reason, I must have been looking away at the moment. I didn't actually catch the slide, but, oh, geez, that's got to be heartbreaking right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, who else did you get to see on Saturday, man?
I don't know.
Lightest Saturday on the floor ever.
Yeah. Well, I had kind of wondered early on, particularly after preview night, if it was going to be a case where people saw that and just said, there's no way in hell I'm coming on Saturday. I'll go do the zoo or somewhere less crowded, less insane.
Yeah.
In between, I think, some of that and the various panels and stuff in Hall H, Ballroom 20, all that kind of stuff. Because this was the day they had the Joss Whedon panel, the Galactica panel, the Heroes panel, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was actually probably the best Saturday crowd in terms of being able to move around I've seen in ages.
Huh. Interesting. Well, now, I guess I kind of contributed to that since I was at panels all day.
Yeah.
Well, and part of it is it depends what part of the hall you're talking about, too.
Yeah.
You go for that center section where the hall is set back a ways, where you've got Disney, Gentle Giant, Hasbro, Lucasfilms, Mattel, all the toy and movie stuff. It's a smaller part of the convention center right there, so it's going to be more crowded and more popular to boot.
But it wasn't even that. I was there, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was not as bad as any of the other days any of the parts. So
yeah. Well, I also forgot to mention that actually the first panel I went to that day, I couldn't get into the Avatar panel, as I mentioned earlier, and instead I went to the Who Wants to Be a Superhero panel with Stan Lee and Feedback and some of the new people from the new season. And the moment that stood out from there, I don't know if you two have ever heard of Manfei. He's a regular to the convention scene. There's a character from the anime Cowboy Bebop. It's a girl, and her name is Faye Valentine, and she has a very revealing outfit. Well, this guy dresses up like Faye every single year. And again, he calls himself Manfei, and actually was one of the rejects in season one of Who Wants to Be a Superhero. In the first episode, when they're flipping through, you know, people that didn't make it, Manfei is one of the people they focus on. Well, he came on up and presented to Stan after revealing his outfit, of course, and the world had to look at his butt, which was one of the most frightening experiences I've ever had in my life, presented to Stan a self-made Manfei comic book that he made after he didn't make Who Wants to Be a Superhero in season one, and then went up and hugged Stan, which was cool and all that, but then everybody else who went up for a question asked to hug Stan.
That's why they usually don't
We're Stan's 7-foot-tall bodyguards. You know, he usually got a wall of giant guys around him.
Well, I put the blame squarely on Jimmy Palmiotti here, because he was the guy who was actually, the panel coordinator for that one, asking the questions and all that, and he let the people come up and do that. And, you know, most panel coordinators do not allow such things. But again, the Manfei thing was kind of funny, and you know, everybody was sort of into it and all that. That was okay. But then when random fans started asking for hugs, that's when the entire panel got ridiculous. So I mean, I guess in the future, maybe he will need to have these bodyguards on hand to stop such things from happening. Because again, that sort of breaks the flow of a panel entirely, doesn't it?
Well, it not only breaks the flow of the panel entirely, but I mean, Stan Lee's not a young man.
Yeah.
We want him to be around for another couple of decades, another century if we can, so let's take good care of him while we've got him.
His earpiece actually wasn't working at first, so he actually couldn't hear a word that any of the people were saying, because he needed a special earpiece in order to actually hear the other people on the panel and the question guys. I mean, that's just to give you a hint as to how old Stan Lee actually is. He doesn't show it most of the time, but this is an old man, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with him. And actually, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention here. Oh, yeah, the masquerade I went to on Saturday. Again, this was another one of those situations where the line stretched all the way around Hall H. Excuse me, not Hall H, Room 20.
Ballroom 20.
Yeah, Ballroom 20. All the way around Ballroom 20. They did not tell you this when you first walked up to Ballroom 20. So you end up walking entirely around just to get to where you were standing, as opposed to the guards being nice enough to say, just walk over there.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a pain in the butt. There were more anime and game masquerade people in the masquerade this year than there were actual comic book masquerade people.
Yeah, it's been going like that way for a while. I mean, like,
you know, you would have when the Lord of the Rings movies were out, you'd have a lot of groups dressed as Lord of the Rings. You'd always have people dressed as anime. I haven't been to the masquerade in 5 or 6 years, but I used to go to it every year. It was one of the things that I always did, and it's just, I just haven't had the drive to go to it lately.
Yeah, you didn't miss much this year. I mean, there were about maybe, I think there were maybe like 3 skits that were really worth it, and the rest were kind of blah. And again, most of them were skits that would have been better suited for Anime Expo. You know, half the people were literally like sitting there like, what the hell is this? I mean, there were the typical hecklers, which were kind of fun because, you know, when skits would go kind of bad, you'd have from last year, there was a really awesome, and again, I was told this by other people, but a really awesome Bender cosplay and a really awesome Beast Boy cosplay. And there was also somebody who dressed as Kang and Kodos from The Simpsons. So at one point, there's a Pinky and the Brain cosplay group that comes out. And they were pretty fun. And people started chanting a combination of All Hail Kang and All Hail Brain. So whenever a skit went bad, people just started chanting All Hail Brain, All Hail Brain. But they were chanting that a lot this year because there were very little things to actually cheer for at the masquerade this year.
Yeah, that one's kind of a common. It's like every year there's something that they tend to fixate on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll start chanting that whenever, you know, like 1 year a guy came out, I remember it was many years ago, in a Mighty Mouse costume. Ooh. And he, you know, it did like that Andy Kaufman thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, where Andy Kaufman stands up there and does the Mighty, but this guy was dressed as Mighty Mouse doing it. You know, and then, like, whenever something would go wrong, people would start, you know, mouse, 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 you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess from the sounds of things, too, they really do just have to put more of the, you know, big panels on maybe, you know, Friday and, you know, Thursday and Wednesday, and then perhaps more days will be like Saturday.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, John and I had a really good night on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. We went to Horton Plaza for dinner with the people from Bushytails, cool. Jetta. Who else was with us?
There were Mike Norton was there.
Yeah, Mike Norton was there. Who's the guy from Devil's Due?
I forget.
Shoot.
Tim Seeley?
No, it was...
Devil's Due Awesome Guy.
Devil's Due Awesome Guy. I'll go with it. I can't remember, and I feel so bad about that.
Yeah, so we had Lynn Workman, Dave Beatty, and Micah Stewart from Bushytails, and... Anton and Janet Wade from Jetta, Kevin, I forget what Kevin's last name is, does Muley, and Mike Norton.
Right.
And there were a couple other people who showed up as we went along.
Few other CGS listeners, I believe. There was somebody who did prop replicas for...
Oh, that's right, for Star Trek and some of the other shows.
Cool.
This guy had like worked with Michael Okuna of and he was just talking about like making the different props, and he's on work. What's he working on now, John? Is he working on Stargate or something?
I don't know. I was talking with Micah and Dave at that point, I think. You see, it was really cool because what we did, we just headed over to Horton Plaza. We all met up there. Mm-hmm. We all grabbed whatever we wanted from the food court, and there was a McDonald's on the top level that had closed down.
Oh.
So we just took over its outside seating area. So we had our own little kind of courtyard area kind of thing.
That's where that outside seating was from. I was wondering, because that's where I ended up taking refuge on, it was on Saturday when we went to get lunch, because, you know, we wanted to get lunch in it so that we could be, you know, not hungry all the way through Masquerade. I was wondering what the seating was for. So cool, that's what it was. All right.
And somebody got a couple of photos of the whole group, and there was, 15 of us or something. It was a sizable crowd.
Cool.
Yeah.
I ended up getting the Mongolian grill while I was there. That was actually really good.
Yeah, I had that too.
I went with the twice cooked. See, whenever I go, I figure it's going to take a little longer than average because I can't do the soy sauce because it has wheat in it and I'm allergic to wheat.
Yeah.
And no matter how fast I yell, no soy sauce, tell that to everybody in the line. By the time he gets to the cook, he's instinctively hurled it at it anyway, so they have to recook it. But they're good sports about it and stuff, so I was fine.
Good. I mean, that was actually surprisingly good. And it's really nice to see any food court that manages to have $2.50 beers. Because usually most places I go to, they're all jacked up in price. And I was able to get a Newcastle, one of my favorite beers, for only $2.50, like at that Mongolian Grill. which made me very, very happy because I was very much in a, my God, I'm hot and sweaty. I need something cool in my system, and that worked very well. So happy me. I love the way that that place is set up. I mean, I've never really been to an outdoor mall like that. So it's fun seeing the stuff that normally would be on the inside of a mall all in like that outside like courtyard area.
Yeah, it's, we can do those in Southern California.
Yeah. You know, don't worry about too much rain.
No, it doesn't rain or snow or, you know, I mean, it'll rain every now and again, but, you know, rarely enough that it's not that big of a deal.
Certainly don't have to worry about snow, yeah.
But, well, and then after the dinner, some of us headed over to the Hyatt bar stuff. I only stay there for maybe an hour or something because mm-hmm. I was still tired from having been up too late the previous night and wanted not to repeat that.
Yeah, good.
I'm an old man.
In Mayday. Yeah, well, it's okay because by the end of the convention, I was barely awake. So, yeah, I probably should have slept a lot more than I did.
Yeah, but by the end of the convention, you didn't have a two-day drive in front of you.
No, that's certainly true. That's certainly true. Again, man, you are a stronger man than I will ever be.
Damn near killed me, jeez.
Oh, my God. Did you at least switch off with the driving with your sister? Or?
A little. I did most of it. Okay. She navigated, made sure we got home, you know, to the right spot and okay. all that stuff.
Did you get to pass, like, the giant ball of twine or anything like that along the way?
We stopped at pretty much every discount bookstore she could find. She came home with, I swear, 4 dozen books.
Oh, nice. Well,
not counting all the freebies she got on the con floor.
I was about to say, so that's great. She waited until after the con to spend all her money. That works.
No, she did. We did shopping on the way out, too.
Okay.
I wound up personally myself, I mean, to hell with her buying, but I bought probably more action figures than I had in the last couple of months put together.
Wow.
On the way out and another 3 on the way back.
Well, I couldn't resist on Sunday. They had the DC figures on sale for $5 a piece.
And
I
where?
The Mattel booth.
Huh.
Yeah, at the Mattel booth, they were selling the main DC figures for $5 a piece, and they were selling the JLU sets, I think, for $10 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Probably just as well I didn't know that.
This is where you having my phone number would have been.
Well, I ended up picking up a Bizarro figure that looked really, really nice that they were selling as part of the – I think they had a Mongol, a Bizarro, a black suit Superman, and a quote-unquote Kal-El figure, which was the Superman with the headband.
Mm-hmm.
And they were selling all of those for $5 a piece.
I've seen those and passed on them at $10 a piece. I might have gotten them at $5 a piece.
Yeah, because again, the Bizarro is worth it. That's a really nice looking Bizarro. I would have rather it been the, you know, the Ed McGuinness style, but this one worked pretty well. It still had the number one around its chest, and that's always fun for me. But again, $5 makes me very, very happy. I didn't do much on Sunday because I was only there until about noon because, again, I thought my flight was leaving at 1:50, but then when we got there, we were told, no, it's not, and then we waited for 2 hours. But
oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it was the weather in the East Coast that did it, mostly because it was absolutely torrential rain here, but it stopped just in time for us to get back, which was nice of the rain to do that. We ended up leaving at, I think, about 4 as opposed to 3, you know, the 1:50 we were supposed to leave. But we were able to get the food court stuff. We got the, you know, California Pizza Kitchen before we left, and all was well. But while I was there, again, I picked that up, and I, you know, trolled the floor a little bit, and then we headed out. So I didn't really do much on Sundays. I can't say much. But you guys, I'm sure, were there a lot later than I was. What was the actual, like, crowd like on Sunday? Were there a lot of people there still?
It was actually spiked back up to Friday levels, I would say, because think a lot of people come on Sunday, and there's not that many panels going on, and I think people are scrambling around trying to get, you know, like, buy stuff, because a lot of times, you know, you can get people who don't want to haul stuff back with them, you know, you can get deals on Sunday. Like that.
Yeah.
Did you go by that Toon Tumblr booth, Ian?
Oh, you know,
those glasses, you know, with the superheroes on them, they were up near the Mile High booth.
I was going to, but then I realized
Right next to the Jetta booth.
Yeah.
Yeah, right next to the Jetta booth.
I didn't want to have any broken glass on my hands just in case for the trip back.
But just you saw the booth though.
Oh
right?
I did. Yeah, no, I did. It was a beautiful booth.
They were by the end of the day, they were pretty much wiped out because they had dropped their prices near the end of the day to $5 a glass because they were $10 earlier.
Did they have any exclusives, by the way?
No, I didn't see any Comic-Con exclusive, okay. But I think they just didn't want to bring a bunch of stuff back with them, so they dropped the price, and I picked up an Invaders glass on my way out.
Their glasses are beautiful. I have about five of them from different cons I've been to. I got their Baltimore Comic-Con exclusive when I was at the Harvey Awards. They had exclusive glasses, and some creators just left theirs behind, so I got one of those. And,
yeah, wow.
New York Comic Con, they had an exclusive the first year and then an exclusive the second year. They're not quite really exclusive, though, because you can still get them on the website. But they had a Ghost Rider that was nice and a Spider-Man that was nice. I got a Mary Jane glass at one point. Huh. And I think I have one more that I can't think of. Oh, yeah, I got a Christmas glass from them that's really nice. You know the Christmas specials that Marvel used to have all the time?
Big, oversized Treasury editions?
You got it, yeah. They actually have the cover from one of those on the glass, and it looks really nice with all the characters and, Christmas hats. It's fun. It's good stuff, and I ended up getting that also. But I didn't get any there, obviously, again, because, like I said, I didn't want anything to break on me because I've had two glasses break on me thanks to my parents mishandling them. So I didn't want that to happen again. I'm not surprised that they sold out and that they lowered their prices because that makes sense.
I didn't even think to check the prices on those on Sunday. I should have.
Any other booths you realize lowering their prices really far on Sunday?
Mile High went from a 10% off on trades down to 20.
Okay.
There were quite a few places that were just blowing stuff out.
I didn't do a lot of shopping around on Sunday. I did get a statue that I was looking for, a Bowen statue that I offered the guy about $20 less than he was asking for it, and he took it.
That's cool.
Cash, you know.
Which one was it?
Scorpion.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did another pass through the hall on Sunday, but I was looking for stuff that I just didn't notice before. So.
Yeah, I bought an Athena Voltaire page from Steve Bryant.
Ooh.
I had picked it out on Saturday because he kept all the art back at his hotel. He just had photocopies of it, and he was going to bring it on Sunday, and I went to pick it up on Sunday. He didn't have it. He had forgotten it in his room. So I walked back over to his hotel with him. He was staying at the Hyatt. And on the way, we bumped into Tim Bradstreet, who's apparently a great friend of Steve's. He got Steve into the industry, and they were just shooting the breeze for 15 or 20 minutes. So I got to kind of sit there and be a fly on the wall and make a comment every now and again. But that was pretty fun. To
be a fly on the wall for Tim Bradstreet and Steve Bryant, that's a pleasure pretty much for any comic fan. Because, again, these guys are really, really nice guys from what – again, I know Steve just from talking to him. I don't know Tim that well from the cons, but I've heard great things about him.
Yeah, so that was big fun. I mean, that, again, it was things like that that just kept happening. I just, get involved and then, there's an hour gone. But it was a great way. I'd much rather have an hour go that way than, some of the other things that I could be doing. Because, frankly, and the thing I look at it as is I didn't really look for back issue comics because, I can find back issue comics on eBay or something. It's not the only place that I can do that. I can't, be standing there, talking with Steve and Tim Bradstreet, on eBay.
Well, you can. It's just a lot less interesting.
That's true.
Well, one of the things I wish I had had an opportunity to do was to be there on Sunday a little bit more because, again, I love those bargain bin stuff, but again, I would have liked to have been able to troll the artist alley just a little bit, because again, I really didn't have much time to do that over the weekend, and it would have been nice to be able to do that. But I had originally thought our flight was at 3. It would have been nice had I known it would have been delayed afterwards anyway. But had our flight been at 3, I would have had a chance to. But no luck this time. But it's okay. I'll be at other conventions and I'll get to meet people that way. So it's all good. Now. Did you feel it was a plus that you didn't have to worry about any of the extra output, say, of people trying to get there on the last day, knowing that it was already sold out, so you didn't have to worry about people showing up at the last second, crowding the hallway that way?
Yeah, it didn't really make any difference to me either way.
Okay.
I mean, the crowd was as the crowd was. Whether they got there, you know, that day or if they'd pre-bought tickets, you know, was irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, this was a first that they sold out ahead of time on a Sunday, right?
It was the first that they've sold out ahead of time, period.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I don't think they even did that on Saturday last year.
Damn. Well, I guess that sort of says that they are, you know, getting a little bigger for their bridges here.
Well, they're getting bigger than the physical capacity for the building, but I've got to give the people who run the con credit for things basically ran smoothly for the entire convention. Sure, there were a couple of jams here and there on the convention floor at times, but they usually had people over there pretty quickly to direct traffic and to free that stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never any chronic, oh my God, I've got to get past this and I can't situation.
Yeah.
And this is a convention that, you know, has grown so much over the years, it could have easily collapsed under its own weight, you know, a decade back, much less at the size it's at now.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it hasn't, but, you know, I mean, for all we know, who knows where it'll be a decade down the road, you know, whether or not they are going to expand this, whether or not it is going to go elsewhere. Because for all we know, if this does continue to grow, it could get too big for itself eventually.
Oh, certainly, certainly. But these guys are doing a very good job managing the growth and dealing with it effectively.
Yeah. And I do have to say that this was the most effective staff at any convention I've ever been to. Because it seemed like they knew what they were doing, they knew where things were supposed to be, and they were helpful with that. And oftentimes when I do go to conventions, I'm displeased with how many people don't know what the hell they're doing when they're working as staff, but people seem to be able to direct you pretty well here, which was a plus for such a huge place like this. Did you guys see any like problems with the staff at all, or were you relatively happy with what happened?
Some of those elite security guys were relatively clueless,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I think it comes down to there's kind of two or three levels of people. You've got the people who are in charge, the people who work for them, who then direct kind of that lower rung, be it the elite security, the volunteers, or whoever. And those people at that bottom rung are basically told, stand here, do this.
Mm-hmm.
They only have so much information, and that's that.
Yeah.
So I don't expect a whole lot out of them. That next higher level, I expect a bit more, and certainly the handful of people up at the top, clearly they know what they're doing. And have been running a fairly good convention.
Okay.
So there's clearly room for some improvement, but nothing that I could point to this year that's, oh my God, this was horrible.
Well, I do remember the one problem that I did have was actually on Thursday when we went to try and get into the Paramount panel at Hall H. They had people lined up on the inside, and we later found out that was not a lineup for the inside. It was a lineup to get outside. And from the looks of things, they had made it seem like this was the line for Hall H on the inside. And it turned out to not even be that. And a lot of people were very upset about that. But again, that happens at a con. You know, wrong lineups will happen when the wrong person hears the wrong thing. So I wasn't really blaming them about that.
I was actually pleased with how some of the lines in the hall itself worked out.
Mm-hmm.
There was like one or two things over at the Disney booth I was watching where I was surprised how big the line was, but I was also pleased how most of it was up along the outer wall of the hall floor, not blocking traffic. There was a clear sign saying, you know, line here for this, line this other in this other direction for this other thing at the adjacent booth. And so, I mean, there's going to be some confusion of where should I be to do what I want to do, but they seem to be working that issue as best they can.
Okay.
I think they did a relatively effective job. I mean, in some of the cases, like with the Hasbro thing, I think that, you know, they ended up having to, you know, hand out tickets to people, you know, to, you know, get in there because they couldn't, or they were not near a wall, so they couldn't have, you know, lines. But they did a pretty good job of saying, look, you know, we can't have ridiculous numbers of people just like clogging the aisles because it was bad enough, you know, with the crowds that existed.
And keep in mind that there's kind of, you know, two sides or two aspects to some of this. There's what the convention people want done, and there's what the people at the booth actually do.
Yeah.
And in some cases, when they're working in tandem, things go very smoothly. In other cases, they, you know, the people at the booth are going to do what they do, and sometimes that doesn't work out too well.
Well, I'd say one of the booths that certainly seemed to not really be helping things a lot was G4. And again, this might just be my G4 bias working here, but they seemed to cause a lot of clutter whenever they were going about, you know, either stopping their cosplayers to get pictures or, you know, stopping people for their interviews and stuff. They just seemed to randomly stop people in the middle of a hallway and not really care too much about whether or not they were blocking people's way. They thought just because they were G4, they could do whatever they wanted. And again, this might just be my G4 bias, you know, coming through, because I don't really like them in the first place, but they didn't really paint a good picture about themselves at the con itself.
I didn't really, you know, notice that myself. There were quite a few places where, you know, I thought there was a camera crew at a really, you know, awkward spot. Yep. In terms of traffic flow, but I didn't really pay attention to whose camera crew it was.
Yeah. See, the only reason why I really noticed it was G4 is because of that huge G4 logo on the mic. So I can understand why, you know, that would go elsewhere.
Well, I was usually trying to avoid the crowd.
I was in several places where they were doing interviews, and it's like, I guess G4, they've got like the hot girls who's like does the interviews.
Yeah.
She was dressed up like the Black Cat one day. I mean, it was like very professional, you know, and then another day she was wearing like a Slave Leia outfit or something. I mean, I saw people doing interviews where the on-screen talent was wearing, you know, some relatively professional-looking costume.
Yeah.
That, you know.
And I'm sure that their mom was very proud.
Yeah, and they made some traffic in and of themselves with people just like stopping in the aisles trying to take pictures and stuff.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure that there were probably at least, you know, at least four or five of the guys that they can impress, you know, the women who do dress up like that by, you know, talking to them in their you know, geek cred voice and hope for the best. And I'm sorry, sir, it ain't gonna happen. Oh, well. All right, so at this point, I'd say we'll wrap things up nice and quickly here with a things you would change, and I guess also any ridiculous moments at the con that you can remember, and I guess we'll wrap things up after that. We'll start with you, Bob. Things you'd like to see change for next year, and any, you know, any random stories you haven't talked about yet that you found kind of interesting.
You know, changing, I think that they just need to continue evolving their line management. I would really appreciate if they would get their line management hooked up in such a way that the people who get someplace early to line up actually are let in prior to people who just come wandering up at the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, you know, common courtesy among that kind of thing, and they didn't do that great of a job on that this year, I don't think.
John, what about you?
I agree with Bob's point. That makes sense. This is one of the first years where I don't really have anything that, you know, oh gosh, they really have to work on this one thing. While, again, nothing was, I'm going to say, absolutely perfect or whatever, crowd control was well done. Panel scheduling more or less was well done. There were a couple of times where I felt they had panels opposite each other, which were very clearly for the same target audience. I think there were one or two, like two podcasting panels opposite each other, or two if you want to do this kind of thing. You know, that I mean, they're doing it to disperse the traffic, and I get it, but it's frustrating as an attendee. So I think they just need to keep managing their growth. They need to be thinking about how they're going to handle more attendees wanting to come next year, because that seems pretty much inevitable. I thought they did a very good job this year on being a much more family-friendly venue. Mm-hmm. There were a few booths that had more adult material or whatever, but I don't recall seeing any booth that was blatantly, okay, here's a porn star signing autographs and stuff or whatever.
They had a couple of Playboy Playmates, but they weren't as ridiculous as in previous years. Ian, like maybe, what was it, maybe about 10 years ago, John, where they had that whole porn alley there?
Yeah.
Remember when those porno comics were like really big?
Oh, book.
Well, actually, you know, the Porn Alley was as recently as like 2 years ago.
Yeah, maybe. I just, you know, you got to steer away from that. I got kids, you know. It's like, you can't even go to this part of the convention because there's, you know, actual porno stars. And there's a difference between a Playboy Playmate who's, you know, relatively classy and she's wearing a dress. And, I mean, it wasn't ridiculous. And then, like, you got your real blatant porno actresses who are, you know, actress, right?
Well, the reason it sticks in my mind is about 2 years ago, I talked with George Perez before the convention started. Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go to this one booth, do some signing, help the people out, get them a little more attention or whatever. And it was utterly ridiculous to me because it was at one of these porn booths.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, if there's anything that could take away attention from porn stars at a comic book convention, it's George Perez. You know, you may as well just put Alex Ross next to him and be done with it, kind of a thing.
Oh, sure, it's like, why not? Yeah. Have Stan Lee right next to him. Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, there was still some of that material, some of that those types of booths, but it was not one of those where it was complete cheesecake or in your face or I don't want, you know, young kids in this area.
Stan Lee would actually like that because, you know, he did do Stripperella and he announced at the one panel that he's now doing a cartoon with Paris Hilton. So,
oh God, are you serious?
I am serious.
Oh,
I'm serious. So Stan likes his kind of trampy young blondes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just if this wants to maintain a family-friendly venue, and when they're advertising Sunday as Kids Day, you ought to be able to take your family around on at least Sunday.
Well, just as long as they call the Paris Hilton, you know, animated series something like Spoiled, spelled S-P-O-I-L-D or something like that, I'll be happy, and I am going to avoid that like the frickin' plague. Ugh.
Yeah.
When Stan whores himself out like that, it kind of makes me a bit sad, but at the same time, he's Stan Lee, let him do what he wants, I guess.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I would like to see changed that I just want to, you know, say right off here, again, going with my previous statement, better handling of the panels. You know, if you're not supposed to go up there and hug people, don't let everybody go up there and hug people. Because, again, if you let one person, that everybody's going to start and there's not going to be a panel anymore. It's just going to be a whole bunch of hugs. And that's not what this is for. That's what autograph sessions are for, meet and greets, that sort of stuff. Better line management, I'm all for that. And better
One question on the line management. What did you guys think of upstairs where they had the entrance and exit hallways for the rooms?
I hated that.
I hated it too. Mostly because the exit felt like it was in a place that would have been a perfect entrance. So I'd either like to see it reversed or I'd like to see it not happen at all. Because it's a big enough hallway where you could have an entrance and an exit and still have people functionally go through that hallway.
Interesting, because, I mean, I wasn't up in those rooms that much, just a time or two. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work reasonably well from my vantage point, but a lot of that was more a matter of them having clearly marked, if you're going to this room, here's where the line's going to be. It's going to jump over to this and continue there. So I thought the line marking was good. It also seemed never to get kind of bogged down in that big, massive center hallway.
Yeah.
So, interestingly,
but I didn't use it much.
I wanted to go from the Stan Lee panel to the Sergio and Mark Grew 25th anniversary panel on, I forget, it was like Friday or something. Mm-hmm. And they were right across the hall from each other. But I couldn't go right across the hall from each other because the exit from the Stan Lee room was out this one side. And I had to walk all the way down and all the way around because it was like way up at the end also.
That's frustrating.
And by the time we got over to the Grew thing, it had already started 10 minutes ago and it was full and closed and we couldn't get in.
I was afraid that was going to be a problem. That's why I asked the question. I was curious about that.
I actually kind of got lucky. Again, I mean, I was lucky enough to have gotten to Who Wants to Be a Superhero when I did, because I got there about 10, 15 minutes after it started, but there still were a couple of seats available. And where it was situated, it would have been difficult for me to be able to get there on time, even if I had wanted to, from the Avatar panel. But had it been closed, I would have been a very disappointed person. So, again, that's just something that will happen when you have a open-closed situation like that where you're exiting one way no matter what you want to do. You're stopping people from going where they want to go sometimes.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that I would like to add about the lines, specifically for the room 20, hall 20, when you're lining up for Masquerade, don't spread people out nearly as much as they did, because there were giant gaps in that line. And it felt like the line was a hell of a lot longer than it was, and you had to walk around a hell of a lot longer than you did had you have grouped people together closer. Because there were giant gaps, not even where doors were, just because people had lined up that way, and they didn't stop people from lining up that way. So that was a bit of an irked moment for me. But, I mean, this is all kind of nitpicking here for me. So, I mean, all in all, it was a great first San Diego Comic-Con for me. I couldn't have really asked for more. Again, do you guys have any extra, like, stories or comments you guys want to add or anything?
I got one other thing I'd like to see changed, actually.
Yeah.
And this isn't so much the convention, but the booths. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the people who run the booths think more about how what they're doing is going to impact traffic flow around their booth and mm-hmm. be more considerate of that. I'm not a fan of this, hey, come over here at this time to stand in line to buy a ticket or to get a ticket, to come back here tomorrow to stand in line to do this, yes. to come back the other day to do this.
Yes.
This whole freebie, mad rush, flash crowd, frenzy type thing is for the birds. If you want people to come to your booth, have something that draws them to your booth that has, I don't know, maybe content, maybe, you know, what you're there to promote or whatever, not just that you have a free trading card or a big bag that's going to go up on eBay for $80 or whatever.
Yeah. I felt that way on Wednesday, actually, because on Neil Gaiman's blog before the con, he had mentioned that at the Paramount booth they were going to be giving away free tickets to Stardust and to Beowulf. And mm-hmm. he had mentioned on there that when you got to the hall, when it opened up, they would be giving away these tickets to both. When we got there, we were told that they were not giving away Stardust until an hour later. And Beowulf, they didn't know when they were going to be giving out. And I'm like, okay, well, this is perfect here, because we specifically situated ourselves to enter at that part of the hall just so we could get the tickets. And then we're told, come back an hour later. At that point, we had been on the other side of the hall, so we were just like, all right, forget it. We're not going to get Stardust tickets. If you're going to say one thing, stick to it at least. That's a bit of a rant
yeah.
there.
I had a friend take his 8-year-old son to, I forget which booth for which trading card game or whatever, mm-hmm. but they were told at 4:30, be back at 5, we'll start the game, you play the game, you get some free stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
They come back at 5. At this point, they had already started. The game was halfway over, so the 8-year-old couldn't participate. Then it comes time to give stuff away. The 8-year-old's right in front trying to get the stuff, and the guy's handing it to everybody but him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So my friend,
similar things happened to us, too. I mean, they did a poor job of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just counterproductive. I mean, that's bad marketing. You wind up with people leaving upset versus happy.
Yeah. Yeah, and what the hell was up with the size of those Smallville bags?
I loved those, actually.
Really? Okay.
Did you see the girl on Sunday?
No, I didn't.
Probably not. I will post a photo as soon as I dig it off my digital camera.
Just tell me she was wearing it.
Yes, she was.
Oh, yes. Oh, beautiful. Because I've been thinking that all weekend, basically. I want to see somebody wear this.
Yep.
Oh, that's
Word
so
is the dress.
So... I tell you what, Ian, like for the guy who sits in that line, you know, what I do is we bring a couple of folding camp chairs, uh-huh. you know, that are pretty big, okay. right? And then you got to lug those around until such a time as you want to go down. But those suckers fit right into that big-ass Smallville bag. So we got one of those, and then we were just able to toss the two. Plus, it's nice, and it's canvas. It's cloth, mm-hmm. so it was very sturdy, and it had wide straps, so you could put it on your shoulder, and, you know, it would, you know, not dig into your shoulder. Because some of those bags that the boots had, they had those really thin plastic handles.
The sci-fi channel bags and the Boondocks bags.
Anything heavy whatsoever that goes into that, and it's just cutting into you. So
yeah,
we really like that Smallville bag.
Well, there is something I could say about the Boondocks bags real quickly before John says something, is that they were small enough where I was able to put my posters inside of them and be able to put it on the plane and have it count as technically not a carry-on, because I already had my two carry-ons, but they let me on with it anyway, so I was very happy about that. But anyway, go, John.
I heard an unconfirmed rumor, but I will say it's from what I would consider to be a highly credible source, that at one point there was actually a kid like who'd fallen asleep in their parents' Smallville bag or whatever on the floor and was completely in the bag. And somebody had some wheeled cart or whatever, ran over the kid's foot or whatever because they didn't realize that it was in the bag. I mean, nobody was hurt or anything, but it's like that's how big these things were. You could put a small child, even not necessarily a small, but you could put a child in these things.
Well, it was funny. At the DC Nation panel, actually somebody went up and asked the exact question, what the hell was up with these bags? And DiDio sort of points to Bob Wayne and goes, it was his fault.
I like
Well, I mean, they're billboards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's advertising.
Everybody had one. You know what else? They didn't run out of those sons of bitches. They had those bags on Sunday.
Yeah.
And they were handing them out.
Yeah.
Well, of course, because they're going to use them again in Chicago.
Yeah. But, I mean, those were, you know, I like those bags.
Well, hey, I mean, again, if it suited you, then, you know, go ahead. But the entire time I'm thinking to myself, are they going to have potato sack races with these things?
I'm going to be bringing my – I'm saving that sucker. I'm bringing it next year with me just in case they're not handing something out like that because that bag is perfect. We got like three or four of them.
I heard they were going for $80 on eBay.
Are you serious?
Really? Well, I got some serious cash here, John. I got like three or four of them. I had to go on eBay.
I want to know how much the dress goes for.
The dress has to at least be $120.
At least.
Because that's specially made, specially designed.
What got me about that is I've got a photo of the girl in the dress and somebody else who was kind of decked out in all the other free crap. Like, you know, it just kind of – it was. You'll have to see the photo, whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's one thing to see people go to the convention in costume. It's another thing for those costumes to be based on the convention itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We've hit a level of reflexivity or something here that's, I think, somewhat unprecedented.
I had a friend – not even a friend. I'll tell this story here because it's actually kind of amusing. I had met a guy at New York Comic Con and – I had completely forgotten who this kid was because, again, we basically just talked online at New York Comic Con. And he had mentioned to me on the New York Comic Con line that he was originally from San Diego. I'm like, okay, fine. And I met him on the Hall H line in the going into the Paramount thing, and I had completely forgotten who this kid was entirely until finally later on it got to me who it was. And at one point we're talking, and he says, yeah, I'm considering cosplaying as a staff member. You know, have a staff shirt and all that, and just see what, you know, how long it takes him to realize that I'm not wearing the actual staff shirt. You know, like have a mock version of it that's not, you know, quite the same. That's, you know, either handmade or, you know, the wrong lettering or stuff like that. Just like some people go to cons and wear false con badges along with their real one to see whether or not people recognize it. And half the time, yep, they don't.
On the one hand, that's funny. On the other hand, I really would not want to tick off the people who run con.
Neither
that
would
just
I.
seems like a bad idea.
Neither would I. I just find the idea amusing. That's all.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's interesting once you get to the, I'm going to cosplay as something from the con. Oh, actually, yeah, before we do finish this up, what was your favorite cosplay all weekend?
Zatanna. I saw a satellite-era Zatanna.
Ooh.
I have a picture of it out on there's a thread on the CGS board that I started with people in costumes.
Cool.
She was wearing I'd never seen that Zatanna costume before. I've seen the fishnets one a lot of times.
That's the blue and white one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
She carried it off really well.
Cool. John, you find anything awesome? Other than
the I got to go with the Warner Brothers bag dress. That was just funny.
Well, you know, I actually saw Freakazoid.
I believe it.
I was very happy about that. I didn't think I would, and there he was. And
well, I saw that guy.
Yeah, that made
my day. There was a guy in a Red Ranger costume that was good, but there was a Pink Ranger, and I didn't get a photo of her, and I wish I had.
Cool. Oh, there was also a collection of Leias that was actually from the Masquerade. There were about like five or six people dressed like Princess Leia, all in a group. That was kind of fun, but they had actually, they called them Josie and the Pussycat Dolls at the Masquerade. They had somebody dressed like Josie from Josie and the Pussycats. They had Catwoman, Black Cat, and a couple of other cat characters all in a group that were well done. And it was that was one of my favorites also. But Pinky and the Brain is definitely up there also because, again, how often do you see Pinky and the Brain cosplayers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. I mean, any final thoughts you guys want to make about the con before we wrap this baby up? Just awesomeness, and we'll be there next year.
It's big and it's exhausting.
Yes, and my feet are still kind of tired from it.
I've already bought my tickets for next year.
Good, good.
I buy them at the con before I leave.
And I'll try and get another press pass. Hey, hey. Okay, I abused my power. I admit it. I'm sorry. All right, I think we've kind of exhausted the listeners on San Diego Comic-Con here. Again, hopefully you kind of felt like you went to it. If you didn't, and if you did go to it, hopefully this reminds you of good times. Before we finish this baby up, John, you have an announcement to make, don't you?
Yeah, Bob's going to be joining me on my podcast on a regular basis. Plan was to start this week, but with work, I'm not totally positive that's going to happen. But we're going to go to a weekly format and just talk about some of the comics we're reading each week.
Cool.
Try to keep it down to, what did we say, Bob, about a half hour or so?
Yep, shooting for a half an hour.
Yeah.
Now, reminding you, half hour wasted is already taken, so you can't use that.
I already have a name for my podcast, Ian.
Oh, yeah. It's the Comic Book Page Podcast over at comicbookpage.com, right?
That's right.
Awesome. But question.
We'll talk about comic books.
Awesome. On a page?
On a
pretty
page.
Much. Well, comics that have pages. So,
okay. Comics that have pages. That's it.
No web comics, I guess, will be our decree.
Aw.
Well, if they're really, really good web comics, maybe.
Okay. Like Athena Voltaire.
Yeah, see, they printed that on a page. So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. You win. But question, how are you going to syndicate yourself?
Very quickly, I hope. No.
I had to ask, sue me. Yeah, but definitely go ahead and check out comicbookpage.com. I am anxiously awaiting this. And again, the fact that you say that it's 30 minutes means I'll be able to listen to it on a regular basis, because that's quick. I like quick.
Well, and that's the goal. Keep it to a manageable length.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, not like a three-hour monster like we do.
Right. Our goal is that we're going to try to hit a Marvel book, a DC book, and an indie book, at least one of each week.
Good.
And we're going to try to hit ones that are not the ones that everybody else are talking about. You know, since John and I each read over 100 titles a month, you know, we can easily steer away from, you know, Countdown, World War Hulk, you know, whatever else that every other podcast is going to be talking about. And we're going to attempt anyway to hit some of the ones that might be a little more off the beaten track.
Well, if I could make a Marvel suggestion, if you guys could touch on New Warriors at any point, I'd be greatly happy. Because
that was one of my suggestions for this week, actually, is good. New Warriors number 3.
Good to hear, because every issue that comes out makes me sold on this concept even more.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm a little behind on my reading. I've got everything from last week, everything from the week before, and half from the previous 2 weeks, which puts me at about 100 comics behind, not counting what I got in San Diego.
Wow. So. I'm not quite there, but now that I'm getting stuff from DCBS, I kind of forget that I have more comics coming. So I'm like, oh, yeah, great, finish that stack. Oh, shit, there's the shipment.
I've got quite a hefty stack, too, because I hardly read anything while I was at the con. Yeah. I started reading the new Looking Glass Wars book.
Well, you see, because I was delayed 2 hours, I got a lot of reading in.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the one good thing about a plane delay right there. And then on the ride back, I watched mostly Who Wants to Be a Superhero and Rescue Me. So that was a nice DirecTV trip back. Thanks, JetBlue.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Bob, you got anything you want to announce or anything? Because other than, you know, the comic book page thing or anything, you got anything in the pipeline or anything?
No. John took about 300 shots of my museum-like room here that he's in the stick-up on the comic book crib section of his comic book page thing. We'll announce it on the comic book page call when that's all up. But come and look at that.
Do you have an official name for your room?
I call it The Room. Or usually, around the house, it's Dad's room or Bob's room, depending on whether it's my kids or my wife talking about it.
See, I like to call John's room the Cave of Long Boxes.
There you go.
Bob's is just amazing. It is, I mean, we started at one, at like the door, and just worked our way around the room, and I took photos of pretty much everything, and it's just, there was just, kept being more things to take photos of. The room is amazing.
Well, I cannot wait to see these photos.
The day after you left, my DCBS box came. It had a new Batman black and white statue in it. It had the big Bardo Women of the DCU bust, and it had the 13-inch
DC Direct Batman. So
see,
before you were even 24 hours gone, I had already added three more things.
And
I think there were some action figures in there too. The Wonder Woman Amazonia, another one.
Once I don't live in a cubbyhole, I'm going to start being able to actually collect stuff, you know, that I would like to put on display. But for now, I barely have enough room to cover up the computer desk that I have. So I'm safe and sound for now. But dude, I cannot wait to see those pictures.
Well, and they're 10 megapixel ones, so I'll create, you know, thumbnail size versions of them to where we can put those on the forum and on my website and stuff like that. So
Very nice.
It'll take a little bit just to kind of catalog and organize, but it'll be well worth it.
Very nice.
Very impressive collection.
And Bob, good having you back on the show. It's been a while.
No problem. Like to do it again. It's fun.
Yeah, definitely. And great having both you guys on, and great having Julian on also. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, we're pretty much done here with episode 43, so let's wrap this baby up. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums at their brand new website address at thecomicforums.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com, and we're also proud members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts that Derek Coward of Comic Book Noise just put together. So go ahead and check that out over at comicbooknoise.com/league. And a whole bunch of podcasts are already a member of that, and it's growing day by day. Please check us out on iTunes and give us a review if you can. And please vote for us on Podcast Alley and dig us on dig.com. Graciously appreciated as always. So once more, for John and for Bob and for Julian, I'm Ian Levesey, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. And hope to see you next year in San Diego. Bye-bye.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.